have up on our agenda Senator Ingebertson's bill, Senate File 1363. Senator Ingebertson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 1363 is the Outdoor Heritage Fund dollars that are being expended as per the Constitution. Everybody certainly understands what this is all about. These are the constitutional dollars that were sales tax dollars were voted on in 2008, and after some extensive meetings and those folks that know about this, we tried our best to be fair. Bills for All Minnesotans are nonpartisan. I mean, it really is. It really has been a pleasure. It's a lot of work, but it has been a pleasure being in charge of an area, actually, frankly, in the Senate, where there are some dollars. As you know, there's no dollars anyplace else. And here, by the Constitution, we have to spend these dollars. I made the comment several different times, Madam Chair and members, that I had to have an armed guard at the door. That wasn't really the case, but some days it seemed like that. But we also had some fun doing it, so it was a good experience. Before starting out, Madam Chair, and we talked earlier, is I do have and with me up front, of course, Mr. Mueller and Mr. Knopf, who will be going through. One will be going through the bill, the lines, and Mr. Knopf will be here for a reference. But he's going to explain the amendment. So I would at this time offer the A2 amendment, and I do have another amendment that is more probably a little little tougher, more financial, and if we could wait until after we go through the four articles, and then I would offer that amendment. And at that point in time, I would like to open it up. So with that, I'd offer the A2 amendment and have Mr. Knopf explain that if I could.
Mr. Knopf.
Madam Chair and members, what the A2 amendment does is there are some issues when lands are transferred to U.S. Fish and Wildlife. If you look on 24.12, it says provide the council or its successor written documentation from the person or entity holding the interest in real property, certifying the person or entity's acceptance of all reporting obligations and responsibilities. The question is how far those responsibilities go. This was added into Lessard Sam's council since 2009 as a requirement, although it's varied slightly. It's not part of the LCCMR requirements for their real property interest reporting, and it's been some confusion with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So as there were some discussions with the service, and the thought what came out of the discussion was to drop this as a requirement. It really isn't necessary, because if you look at 1, 2, and 3, if you're transferring land to somebody else, you give them the responsibility and inform them of their responsibilities. And then you provide written notice to the council of the transfer so they know who to expect the report from. It's really just transferring the reporting requirements. And if a report, and they are required to have annual reports, if a report is not submitted for that year, they'll know who's not doing it. The certification of accepting all obligations and responsibilities has caused problems for U.S. Fish and Wildlife, because they're not subject to all of our laws and that sort of thing. So after discussion with them, it appears that like 1, 2, and 3 take care of it. Those are the same requirements that we use for Environment Natural Resources Trust Fund. This was an added requirement for the Outdoor Heritage Fund, and it's causing problems in transferring land.
Are there any questions about
and,
that?
Madam Chair, the other two sections are just amending the 2009 and 2010 laws to be comparable with the change. This real property interest report is enacted every year along with the Outdoor Heritage Fund appropriations. And with this, that would make it consistent throughout all three years that the money would be appropriated from this fund.
Are there any questions from members? If not, all in favor of the A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The motion does prevail, and the amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And if I can just give you a quick overview, and then I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Mueller for the walkthrough on the financial here. As you can see, Article 1, the Outdoor Heritage Fund we'll be talking about today, that's the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage fund. The Article 2 is the Clean Water Fund. That's administered by staff from the PCA, just so you understand who's doing things here. Parks and Trails Fund, the percentages have been dictated with regards to Senator Peterson's bill, and that's a percentage base, and as to how the allocation for the Parks and Trails dollars are allocated throughout the state, as well as the Arts and Heritage Council, Cultural Heritage that our committee was very active in putting together. So with that, Madam Chair, if I could turn it over to Mr. Mueller, and he'll be working off the spreadsheet that I'm holding right here in my hand.
So. Madam Chair, the spreadsheet should be titled Cinefile 1363 Dedicated Funding. It shows the current biennium spending out of these dedicated funds, the governor's budget, where the governor did have recommendations for these funds. The governor had no recommendations out of the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. And then the Senate recommendation. I'll remind members again, there is no base budget for these funds. We start at zero going into the biennium. I put the current biennium on the spreadsheet just sort of as a reference point to what we appropriated previously. But again, there is no base budget for any of these funds. I'm not going to go line by line through the funds. I'll just highlight some of the totals and basically some of the issue areas. And in regards to the Outdoor Heritage Fund on page one, any questions that members might have on details of some of these projects? I know Mr. Bill Becker from the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Fund is also here. So I'll be working off the last column titled Senate. And again, page one and two, and into page three is the details for the Outdoor Heritage Fund. We have $32.67 million going for prairies. It's on line 20. Line 35, $14.37 million going for forest projects. Next page, we have $15.827 million going for wetland projects. The habitat total is $22.9 million. And then the various administration lines, lines 61 through 64, we have $688,000 in fiscal year 12, and then the only fiscal year 13 appropriations out of this fund, we have $471,000 to fund the cost for the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Fund. That's the only fiscal year 13 appropriation out of this fund. Again, this proposal makes appropriations out of fiscal year 12 and 13 out of all the funds except for the Outdoor Heritage Fund. They'll be coming with another recommendation next year to spend the fiscal year 13 money.
Madam Chair, if I might.
Senator Ingerperson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For clarity then, on the Outdoor Heritage Fund total, maybe you want to explain why the difference between the governor's and the Senate's position there, where those dollars are. They're very, very minor. Just having a look at that. 40-some dollars.
Yeah. Madam Chair, on line 62, this is the only difference between what the Gov was carrying as his recommendation, which was the recommendation from the Outdoor Heritage Council. The Outdoor Heritage Council originally had recommended $84,000 for a technical assistance.
That's the difference, Adio.
Madam Chair, maybe I'm carrying a wrong number on this one, but maybe we are exactly the same at $40,000 each. Okay. I think originally they had a different number in the Gov's budget, and then they amended it.
So are we saying that on line 62, under the governor's budget, it is also supposed to be 42?
Yes.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
So we're exactly the same then as the governor's budget. On line or page 3, you see the totals for the fund, and then I have a fund balance here also. The Senate and the governor is recommending $86.942 million out of the Outdoor Heritage Fund. This would leave a fund balance of 14% in fiscal year 12, and then since we're not spending really any of the fiscal year 13 money, there's be approximately $100 million left over in fiscal year 13 for future appropriations.
So, Senator Ingebrigtsen, you go through this process annually then?
That's correct.
And so that would be reserved for next year?
That's correct, yes. We've been doing it one year at a time. There's been discussion, Madam Chair and members, about going to a biennium budget. However, we haven't got to that point yet. We still think it's new enough where we'd like to stay with it on a yearly basis. Is that your question?
Yes.
Yes.
Madam Chair, on to Article 2, which is the Clean Water Fund. And you'll see here the recommendations compared to what the governor's budget. There'll be some bigger differences here. The governor's budget, we'll start with Department of Ag. The Senate is recommending $16.4 million of clean water money to the Department of Agriculture. The governor was at $15.15. On to PFA, or Public Facilities Authority, the Senate is recommending
Senator Newman.
Could you go back, please, to line 86 and just tell us what that is, Ag BMP Loan Program? I just don't know what it is.
Mr. Mueller?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Newman, that is the Ag Best Management Practices Loan. And it's a program that the Department of Ag has run for a number of years, usually with general fund money, but over the last, since we have Clean Water Fund, it's been supplemented with clean water money. So it is actually a revolving loan, mostly a revolving loan program for best management practices on to help reduce water erosion and water and improve water quality. Now, if Mr. Knopf has any.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Newman, I think the key here is that it goes out to local bankers or local units of government. They have designated people who provide these loans, and they're low-interest loans for farmers and rural landowners, not just farmers, but also rural landowners, to do things like ISTS improvements, things like that. And they're very low-interest loans.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, then to the bottom of page 3, we have the totals for the Public Facilities Authority. And the Senate has $33.4 million. The governor had $32.4 million. These are mostly grants to for, like, wastewater treatment and other city-type improvements to help with dealing with runoff and things like that. Page 4, we have the line items for the Pollution Control Agency. The Senate has recommended $46.7 million. The House, or the governor had $52.6 million. You see the governor had a, on line 113, was sort of a late addition for a new program, $7.5 million for SSTS grants. And that's the major difference in this bill, was that was sort of a late addition with the governor's bill. Under DNR, the total is on page 5. The Senate is at $21.3 million. The governor was at $21.6 million. So totals, we're pretty close on that agency. The next agency is the Board of Water and Soil Resources. Here's where the Senate is at almost $54 million. The governor is at 48.9. So here the Senate is higher and doing more grants to local governments than what the governor had proposed. Then Department of Health is the next one. These are mostly grants to monitoring drinking water and groundwater. The Senate's at $6 million. The governor's at $7.1 million. On the last page, Met Council, there's an appropriation in the Senate bill for $500,000 per year to help continue the water supply planning. This is a slight increase over the current biennium, but less than what was in the Gov's budget, and I think the Gov had some additional projects that were going through the Met Council out of that $4 million. The last part here, you'll see $411,000 to the Legislative Coordinating Commission. $11,000 of that is for the public information website, and then you'll see a new item that is not in the governor's budget, $200,000 per year for the new cost of the Clean Water Council that's being established in this bill.
Do you want
to? Last, we have a grant that's running through the Department of Administration for helping clean up an existing well that's in Minneapolis for the Cowles Center for the Dance. So you see a total of $179.4 million out of the Clean Water Fund, and at that amount, we leave a 3% fund balance after fiscal year 13 from the Clean Water Fund. And you'll see that 3% has been established and carried through with the Clean Water Fund, the Parks and Trails Fund, and the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund as sort of the target we were looking at in committee, is leaving a 3% balance for those three funds. Next, we have on page 7, the recommendations for the Parks and Trails Fund. And you'll see I put the percents that just sort of a split between state parks, regional parks, and metro parks. And you'll see in the columns, I put the percent splits of how much of the parks fund is going to those different entities in columns. The Senate has $28.9 million going for state parks, about $20.3 million going for regional parks. Now, these two programs are run through the DNR. $76,000 for restoration audits, that was part of the governor's bill. And then metro parks would, again, get the same as what state parks, $28.9 million. So you'll see the percent on the Senate side is a 37-26-37 split. And the total there for Parks and Trails funding is $78.1 million. Again, at that level, it leaves a 3% balance at the end of fiscal year 13. Then the last fund, starting on page 8, is the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. This money flows through a number of agencies, mostly the first one, the Arts Board, and at the level here, $45.46 million, that's roughly 46% of the arts, or 44% of the arts fund money goes to the Arts Board. And they run a variety of grant programs through the Arts Board for different purposes. Next, we have $6 million going through the Department of Education for grants to regional libraries. After that, we have $24.5 million going to the Historical Society for a number of grant programs that are run through that. Then we have the Department of Administration, where we run a lot of the pass-through dollars that would directly go to the entities you can see listed on 241 through 253. All those entities together, it's about $16.6 million going through things like public TV, public radio, the zoos, and children's museums, Science Museum, and the Minnesota Film Board. The next page, 9, you'll see there is $3 million for the Minnesota Zoo. Next, we have the Humanity Center of $2.15 million for various different grants. Purpich Center for the Arts is $2 million. And a new one here this year that was not in the bill last year is $2.8 million that will go through the Department of Agriculture for grants to county fairs and ag societies. Then we have the Indian Affairs Council at $1.75 million for a couple of different grant programs that through that. The last page, we have a grant going to the Department of Veteran Affairs for it's a grant program that would go to veterans' rest camps, $450,000. Then the last item here is $6,000 to the LCC to help the cost of their website. So the total for the Arts and Culture Heritage Fund is $104.7 million, and again, at that level, it leaves a 3% balance after fiscal year 13. The last thing on page 10, you can see a summary total by funds. So the total spending in this bill, including all four funds, in just 1 year, the Outdoor Heritage Fund is $449.2 million from the dedicated funds.
That's it.
Questions, members?
Members, any?
Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Madam Chair, I think it just should be noted that you'll see some of these areas have gone up expenditure-wise because there is actually more dollars coming in than the year previous to the total of right around, I think, $10 million total. That's just a rough figure. More dollars this biennium overall than there was last year. So you'll see some of the areas go up. You'll see some go down. If there isn't any further questions, I think I should probably offer this A6 amendment, which will get the bill into order and for final discussions here, if that's...
Senator Cohen does have a question.
Let's go.
Oh, we'll go forward with the amendment.
Okay, Madam Chair, I would offer the A6 amendment. And I'm going to have Mr. Mueller describe that, if I could, please.
Madam Chair, as the amendment is coming out, there's a couple of different pieces of the amendment. Most of the amendment is moving a little bit of money around. Lines, wait till it gets... The first part, lines 1.2 and 1.3... is adding $154,000 to the SSTS, it's the Subsurface Treatment System Grants in PCA. This is out of the Clean Water Fund. Line 1.3 deletes the grant through the Department of Administration for the call center. Then on lines 1.4 through 1.26, there's a couple things going on. First of all, we're moving the library grants, which in the bill currently they are being funded through the Department of Education under a formula. And this would be moving the existing amount, the $3 million per year, up to the Arts Board as a separate grant program under the Arts Board. So all the libraries would have to seek their funding through the Arts Board under this proposal. And it also, so it moves $6 million up to the Arts Board to fund these library grants. But then it also takes $300,000 and moves that down to, on lines 127 through 130, we're changing some of the fundings for Minneapolis Public Radio and AMPRS. We're making their funding even at $1.325 million per year. So that would be, they would be funded at the same level instead of existing. NPR was getting $1 million per year, and AMPRS was getting $1.5 million. So we had to move $300,000 down to this area to get them at even funding at $1.325 million per year. So, again, it's moving the funding for the public libraries up to the Arts Board and creating a grant program there so that it wouldn't just go out by a formula as currently stated in the bill and in the current biennium. And then moves a little bit of money down to the public radio and AMPRS and makes them at even funding. So that's the amendment.
Madam Chair.
Are there questions about the amendment? Senator Higgins.
Mr. Mueller, I don't think you talked about line 1.3.
Madam Chair, Senator Higgins, I did mention it deletes the grant to the Cowles Center and moves that money to the PCA SSTS program, which is a grant program for subsurface treatment systems.
And Senator Higgins?
Madam Chair, I'd like to have some discussion on that. I know we have advocates from the Kohl's Center here. This was an issue of a well that was discovered when they were doing the rehabilitation of the of what we knew as the Schubert Theater, now the Kohl's Center for the for Dance and the Performing Arts, and this would help deal with that well that there was no indication even was there. Maybe Mr. Appitz or whoever would like to come in. Mr. Mickelson, Mr. Appitz, come and give more information to the committee.
So
the Environment Committee was pretty strong about putting this in, so I'm kind of surprised that it's recommended to be deleted.
Seems like a handout.
And we have a handout, I see.
Which line is this?
Page 3. Amendment.
Okay. Delete section 10.
Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Madam Chair, and I welcome the two individuals to the table here to talk about this. We did talk about it. Senator Higgins brought it forth in the committee. I believe the request at that time was double the amount that we had put in the bill originally. I think I'm accurate in saying that. And I'm going to let the gentleman here explain it better instead of me trying to explain what this is all about. But this was off, I believe it was a bonding bill that was put forward some years ago. So,
correct. Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Stacy Mickelson with ArtSpace Projects, which is the developer of this center, the Kohl's Center. You probably remember it more as its former name, the Schubert Theater, the project that was moved about 10 years ago. In 2005, we received a $1 million planning grant from the state of Minnesota to complete our work or to begin it. And in 2006, we received the remaining amount from the state, the $11 million, that we used to leverage $31, $32 million in private funds to begin this process of rehabilitating the theater and connecting it to the Hennepin Center for the Arts in downtown Minneapolis, creating a flagship center for dance and arts education in Minneapolis that does serve the entire state. We've touched, I think, now about 190 schools across the United States or across the state of Minnesota since we started this project in 2003, and we've touched numerous states across the United States, and we are also doing international education from the center. It should be also noted that we offer the programming to Minnesota schools for free to any school that would ask for our services that is a Minnesota public school. If you look at the back side of the sheet, you can see the front side really details who we are and what we do at the Kohl's Center. But if you look at the back side of your sheet there, you can see a couple of diagrams. I don't have the one that in front of me, but John, can you hand me and I'll walk them through what they're looking at. If you look at diagram B, You see an outline of where the Hennepin Center for the Arts sits now in the orange. The piece that's in the gray, you kind of see the pictures of bricks there. Those two sections are the pieces that we use the state funds to help build out. That's the atrium that will link the two buildings and then the new stage house behind the Schubert Theater. You see the green dot there behind the Schubert Theater. When we went to excavate to pour the footings for the stage house, we found an abandoned well. There was no record of this well from the State Department of Health. There was no record at the city, and there was no record at the county of this well. So nobody knew that it was there. Upon going in, we found out that it most likely serviced the Old West Hotel. In 1941, that hotel was demolished. They walked away from the well and basically filled their hole with the debris from the hotel, which is also not up to code. And when we went to investigate the well, we found out it was a 622-foot deep well. So imagine a little taller than the IDS tower and shoved into the ground. At about 500-something feet, we found an abandoned oil-lubricated pump that the State Department of Health said, in order to receive a compliance from us, you must cap and seal this well, but you have to fish that pump out. And so over the course of nearly 8 weeks, we fished out that pump washer by bolt, by nut, by copper piece, by whatever it was that it took to get the entire thing out, tested the water to make sure that the two aquifers in which it ran through were not compromised or contaminated, and received our certificate of compliance from the Department of Health. We talked with Chairman Ingebrigtsen about this issue, and you see the numbers here in that in the pink box above it, detailing kind of how we got to the total amount of money that was spent over the course of that 8 weeks, and that encompasses all of the lost time, all of the winter conditions that we had to endure because we lost that time. We then were pushed into winter and had to tent the entire exterior so that we could do stucco work, all the things that we should have been doing while we were doing dealing with the well that nobody knew about. So Senator Ingebrigtsen agreed with us that one half of, because the state has such a large investment in this project, that it would seem appropriate that maybe one half of the well mitigation, the 311, roughly 154,000, could be given to us to help with the reimbursement for capping and sealing the well. My colleague John Abbott is here as well to add a little bit more to some of the investigation we've done to figure out who else or what other agencies could have or should help us.
Mr. Abbott.
If I may, Madam Chair, thank you very much. My name is John Abbott. I'm with the law firm of Messerly & Kramer, joining Stacey Mickelson representing ArtSpace. You may say, well, why in this bill should those dollars come forward? And we appreciate the consideration Senator Ingebrigtsen has given us. Basically, it's because there is money in this bill for well capping, and that's one of the things that we try to do is find a place that we could recover some of these funds. We've been to just about every agency in the alphabet that I can come up with, PCA, DNR, Bowser, Department of Health, Met Council. I got a couple more here. I'm sorry. I can't remember them. And the problem we run into consistently is that they did the work. They got it done. The health department said, cap the well, find out what's in it, cap the well, and go on with your work. They were in the middle of the project when they discovered this particular incident and couldn't stop the project, couldn't stop going forward, needed to finish it. So come back here and have asked for assistance in this particular instance. Had we gone to Bowser beforehand, they are very helpful and could have helped us with this. Had we gone to PCA, there was a likelihood. Had we gone to Deed, there's a likelihood we might have found some assistance. But the fact that ArtSpace undertook to finish the project and therefore can't be reimbursed is the issue that we've run into time and again. So we appreciate the consideration that's been given here. It is a project that the state invested some good amount of resource in. They raised just about three times the money to finish this project, and we bumped into this situation causing a shortfall that means some of it won't be done in time for the opening on September 9th. So we've been just about every other place that we can go to, and hopefully you could give us some consideration of this.
Madam Chair, I suppose it would have been very easy for them to just ignore the well.
Indeed.
And I suppose with thinking back on it, maybe they wish they'd done that. But they did it right, and it cost them a lot of money. It had absolutely nothing to do with their project as far as is their responsibility. And this was just coming up with some money to try to reimburse them for this. And you know, over the last several years, this has been a very labor-intensive project, much more so than a new building or something. So it's kept people working for a few years now that wouldn't have been working otherwise, and they did raise about three-fourths of the money in the private sector. So this is just, I think, is kind of a goodwill gesture for doing what they were
the right
supposed
thing
to be doing. But sometimes doing the right thing isn't the cheapest. So I really don't think we should leave this in here. It just doesn't make sense to me that we don't take that into consideration.
Senator Higgins?
Madam Chair, I often think of my dad, and if he could have found the easiest, cheapest way to do something, that's the way he would have done it. He would have gone down to Hennepin Avenue at 3 in the morning, some Sunday morning, with a bunch of cement and just poured it in and, you know, then put the blinders on. And yet the folks at the Kohl Center did the right thing. You know, they talked to the health department. What do we do? Got their marching orders from the health department, went and did the work. And as Senator Langseth said, you know, they could have just turned a blind eye like my dad would have done. But they did not, and I'm hoping that we can leave this in the bill and delete whatever sections in the amendment are appropriate to delete. they're just at the point now where, you know, they can see the grand opening, it's scheduled, and there's so much work that is left to be done, and there's a lot more money left to be raised to make up for, you know, this unexpected money. And the call center, I think we can all assume that we own a whole lot of it because the bonding bill was very generous, and then the call center went and raised more than twice that much money on their own. So,
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Ingebrigtsen, why is it that you're trying to take this out?
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Why would you not?
Madam Chair, we looked at this again. This was half of the request, and Madam Chair and members, and Senator Langseth at that time did talk about the bonding, and I think he might have been part of that process, and we understood that doing the right thing sometimes costs a little more, obviously a little more money than was expected, and we certainly want to do the right thing. We don't want to. At least I don't want to, you know, leave anybody with the impression that next time around we're going to take some concrete to the floor and fill it up. I don't think anybody intends to do that. When the Department of Health knows this is going on, all of a sudden we've got a 311,000 dollar unintended consequence here that we didn't know what was going on before the project was let out to bids, I would say. My question, I guess, would be maybe the gentleman next to me can answer, and I don't even know if we even brought this up in our committee, but most projects like this have large projects like this, and Senator Langseth knows this, have large, I think set-aside dollars, contingency dollars, certain percentages. I think it's just good business to figure in X amount of dollars or X amount of percentage on a project like this. If they did, and if that was used up someplace else, I guess that wasn't. I don't remember that question being asked. So
that's a good question,
Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
And Madam Chair, could the remainder, because this doesn't cover at all what your projected cost is, could the remainder be obtained in some other fashion, or if at least you had this amount of help?
Yeah.
Mr. Mickelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Olson. To answer your question about raising the rest of the funds, we are actively going back to we had seven families that came forward in the metro area and throughout the state that contributed $1 million or more of their own personal wealth. Three of those families contributed $2 million and more. We are, and we have several other donors at other levels, and we are continually going back to them, asking them for more support. As you can, no pun intended, but the well is run dry. And they feel that they've done a lot for this project. And we are also going into the final phase of the capital campaign, which is the buy a brick, buy a chair, which will raise smaller amounts of money, which will help make up some of this gap. It's certainly won't probably go a long ways towards the $1.2 million, but we are actively seeking the remainder of that money. We did ask for the full amount of 1.2, but that was a rich amount probably for the committee, so we settled on the 155 to get us started. To answer the question about the contingency piece, Senator Ingebrigtsen asked, this project was about a $43 million project. We received, as the final capstone for our financing, was stimulus dollars, the ERA money that was passed out of the Congress by President Obama a couple of years ago through a grant from the city of Minneapolis to complete this project and get us over the hump. We were not quite at the end of our capital campaign, so we asked for a bridge loan from a local bank to get us there. So the margins on this project were so tight that we weren't afforded the luxury of a contingency fund. We had to have every dollar count for absolutely everything, and that's why this unintended or unanticipated well really did blow the budget apart. And so the $1.2 million that we're missing would have paid for seats, would have paid for the rigging equipment for the fly loft, would have paid for the lift for the stage and the orchestra pit. And those are the things that we're going back to those families and asking them if they will contribute just a little bit more to get us over to pay for those essentials of operating and running a theater as according to the bonding agreement with the state of Minnesota. And so that's That's why we didn't have a contingency and didn't have that extra cushion to absorb the 1.2, because the margin was just not there with such a tight budget.
Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So first, I would offer an oral amendment to the amendment to delete line 1.3 on the A6, and then just a few comments about that. I think this is an example of a public-private partnership that has worked, that the state has put in some money to leverage getting greater dollars for the greater good, and I think that's something that we ought to use as a model going forward, and that we don't want to be short-sighted and take action today that could actually deliver a less than optimum result for all of the work that's gone into this project. And so I don't think that would be very good judgment. My dad does things the way Senator Higgins' dad does things and would have poured concrete down that hole. And, you know, sometimes the way things look when things are done that way isn't so great. And I appreciate the quality that everyone has brought to this project and think we want to go forward with that. And then the other point I would just make, Senator Ingebrigtsen, is you are the one place that has some money this year. You know, we know we can't go back to the Department of Health and say, you made us, you know, deal with this well. Where's the money? There is no other division where we could go to perhaps find this resource. We are fortunate to have passed this amendment. We are fortunate that this is a place where we can go and take care of this problem. And so I would urge members to support it, and I would urge Senator Ingebrigtsen to consider it as a friendly amendment.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm sorry, Senator Olson, I didn't answer your question with regards to why I was against it, why I was before not against it. But let me remind you that Senator Bonner, you said that's a public-private partnership. That happened in 2006. The Minnesota State GO bonds were issued for this. So the state of Minnesota has done a significant portion. And I just might caution folks with regards to these dollars we're talking about this afternoon is if you do this, what other project that didn't expect expenses to all of a sudden be there before the end of the project, are they going to come forward? Because we do have these dollars, we've got to be very mindful that these dollars are and should be directed as the Constitution says they should be, and I don't think that this does make the constitutional language. That is the reason I asked it to be taken out. So I understand where they're coming from, but if we open the door here, are we going to open everybody else's door? And I'm here to tell you that we probably will. So with that, I would certainly ask the members to vote against that.
Madam Chair.
Senator Higgins.
Madam Chair, we had discussions in the Environment Committee about other things that are probably not in the Constitution, but that we thought were important to do, the veterans' rest camps. There's nothing in the constitutional amendment that would actually address those. The county fairs,
culture senator.
That doesn't really fit in here either. So I think, if you're going to try to pull this one out for constitutional reasons, there are a whole lot of other things that are skirting that same line. And the committee made a judgment that we had language that was sufficient to have all three of those work together and in this, and so targeting the one doesn't seem to be in the spirit of what we do.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and maybe Mr. Apitz or I don't know if Senator Ingebrigtsen, you can answer this too, but you mentioned that you'd gone around and talked to various departments, and you mentioned the Department of Health. What was the response to the Department of Health, I guess? Did they – had this well being there, had this been creating a problem? Had there been issues with it that required it to be removed? Or just what was the reason why they said it had to be removed? And
sure.
Did you ask them if they would be willing to fund the at least part of the removal cost at all? Or just can you tell us a little bit about that?
Mr. Mickelson?
I can speak to some of that.
And then I'll go to the second part.
Sure. Madam Chairman.
Mr. Mickelson.
Senator. In the middle of the construction, we did talk to the Department of Health because we found this well. It was abandoned, and the State Department of Health required us to properly cap and seal it because it had not been. But before we properly cap and seal it, we had to investigate actually what was in there and how it was working, because there was no record of it at the State Department of Health. And so that's when we did the investigation to find out that it was 622 feet and that this pump was 500-something feet in there. And it was upon that revelation that the Department of Health told us that we had to get that out. Now, we could have stopped work, I suppose. I wasn't at the site when this was discovered, and I'm not part of the construction crew. McGuff Construction Crew is the one who is doing the work for us and very capable. They built the Guthrie Theater and some other larger projects in town, so we trust them. We also had we had deadlines in which we had to meet certain objectives because of some of these funds that we were using. And we didn't have the luxury, certainly, of losing the 8 weeks for the period that it took to properly cap and seal the well and fish out the pump. But you can imagine if we had stopped and made application to multiple agencies, the amount of weeks that we would have added on to the amount of lost time that pushed us out. And we now are hoping to be complete in our construction by mid-July, even with that two-month delay. But this would have probably pushed us well into the opening season of 11 and out further, and that just wouldn't have worked for what we had promised everyone and promised in the state grant agreement under the bonds that we issued with the state.
And Madam Chair,
and
I guess just, and maybe I don't know who can clarify, maybe counsel can clarify, this statement from the Department of Health that you had to do this, is that something that's in statute? Do we have statutory requirements that this be done? And is that why they said you had to do it, or is this something that they interpreted to be necessary on their under their rulemaking or whatever other authority they may have?
Madam Chair, I think they're, if you will, Senator Hand, the attempt to cap a lot of these wells just all over the state is a priority that the state has had for some time. Dropping down into the aquifers and polluting the aquifers is something that we've tried to stop in this state, and there's lots of these little holes all over the place. This one went through two aquifers, and as Stacy said, it was 622 feet deep, so we dropped through two and then had a pump stuck at the bottom of that deal. To your particular question, Madam Chair, Senator Hand, I'm just looking at the little form we got from the Department of Health that said basically pre-approval is required to qualify for these programs, so arrangements should be made in advance. That's not a novelty. Certainly we understand that the agency would want to know in advance before you go spending money. It was, as Stacy said, a situation where we couldn't stop in the middle of construction and just go make application hoping that several months down the road we'd get approval for this stuff.
And, Madam Chair, and I guess the reason I'm trying to understand that is that there's a cost here that's being asked to be incorporated in Senator Ingebrigtsen's bill, and I'm just wondering why, if this was something the department had requested be done to meet their requirements, that maybe the cost should be appropriated from Department of Health rather than this bill. And I'm not advocating for that necessarily, but I'm just asking the question.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Madam Chair, somebody from the Department of Health is here that could answer maybe Senator Hand's concerns.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Linda Brummer. I'm from the Minnesota Department of Health. This issue is a little more complicated than the way it's been portrayed. You may have heard that we have delegated programs at the Health Department, and actually this is a case where the Minneapolis Department of Health runs the well code program for the state. So we have an agreement that they run a program on the same level of the health department. So every time you said Minnesota Department of Health, it was really Minneapolis Department of Health, just to clarify. We do take responsibility for the well code across the state, and there is a requirement that wells be properly abandoned so that they do not provide conduits for additional contamination to go into the ground. And as was mentioned before, our well abandonment and our well sealing funds, you have to apply in advance for them. And so the issue of getting no from the health department and the various sources of fundings was we were just following our rules. And I would also acknowledge that this is a much larger well I don't even know. I believe this. We wouldn't have even had the funds to pay for this one, for the sealing of it.
Senator
and
Hamm.
Madam Chairman, thank you for that. It sounds like what, and I'm just trying to clarify, but it sounds like what you're saying is that the Department of Health has got funding to deal with these open wells. And it may not be sufficient in this case because it's a larger well, but it does raise the question of whether or not dealing with that problem is appropriate in this budget area. If that's where it's, if it's supposed to be a Department of Health issue, then maybe that's where this ought to be. And I'm just asking that question if that's appropriate.
Madam Chair, Senator Hann, we have funds. It's variable from year to year as to how much money we have. That would be why we're requesting well sealing funds as a part of the Clean Water Legacy Funds this year. We don't. It's not a line, a baseline item appropriation where we always have money.
So, Madam Chair, so Ms. Bremer, elsewhere in this bill there is well sealing money.
Madam Chair, Senator Higgins, yes, there is in the I believe.
Page 44. Which means it is pertinent.
It's under the Health Department.
Mm-hmm. Page 44.
It's page 44.
Line 17.
It's $250,000 each year for a total of $500,000.
Senator Bonner.
Madam Chair, and so does Senator Hann, that does draw the connection that it is an appropriate use of money in this bill and that this is the best place to deal with it, given the circumstances, I would say.
So, Madam Chair?
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, could that, that there is certainly a linkage that is, that's provided, and if you wanted to have it in Department of Health, would there be, would it be appropriate to add some language that notwithstanding your requirement of a pre-application that you could in fact be the vehicle to assisting with the rest of this project.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I believe what we were answering based on our current rules to run the program, so you would probably have to put language in that and so you'd be setting precedent that wells after they were sealed that people could come back and apply for money. It's just this is on such a scale that it's much larger than your standard well sealing that I guess it makes sense to me that it has a line item here.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
Well, Madam Chair, that's kind of what I was inferring is not take away the money, put it there, and allow the health department, I think you were asking, allow the health department that in this particular case, be very specific, that rule, notwithstanding that particular rule, could be waived for this case. And I think there's pretty clear that doesn't happen every day that you find a humongous well with a pump down 600 some feet crosses two aquifers, and it's rather critical that this be corrected. But if it's the idea of jurisdiction, you know, don't take the money away. Put it over there and put some appropriate language that would allow you to do it without your own, you know, bureaucratic structure having to, to stop it.
Ms. Brower.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, again, the issue is that we do not pay for the well abandonment after the fact. And so it's an appropriate activity, but this is just different than how we normally run the program.
That's what I'm saying. But yeah. If we gave you the authority to do it in this case, to be the conduit for that, those resources going there, given that, you know, maybe this is off the wall, but somebody else may have something to say about it. But I think Senator Hann was trying to say these things are within that jurisdiction. Why not have it there? This is a very unique circumstance. How can we make that work through the Department of Health?
Senator Newman.
And I was proposing one possible idea for that.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree with Senator Olson, Senator Higgins. If we decide that we want to allow the department to fund this. We certainly have got the right to do that, notwithstanding what they normally do.
Sure.
My question is, however, and I would direct this to Senator Engelbretson, if the funding of the sealing of the well for the Cole Center for the Environment or for the Center for Dance doesn't meet the constitutional criteria insofar as the purpose is, wouldn't the same be true then of the funding for the Department of Health on page 44, beginning at line 17? I think you had earlier stated that funding doesn't meet the constitutional criteria. So if you could remark on that, please.
Thank you, Senator Newman, and to back up a little bit here to Senator Higgins's comments with regards to county fairs and veterans parks not being part of our heritage. I don't think we want to sit here all day and argue about whether veterans are part of our culture and history and past. I don't think anybody's going to win that argument. I feel this is a proper way to honor them, and also it allows them the comfortable setting to share their war stories. So we as a committee thought this was a good place to talk about that particular part of our ongoing, I should say, culture as well. And as far as county fairs, this is a new issue. This is a new thing in the legislature, but county fairs are truly part of Minnesota's culture and history. County fairs have a strong ag background, which includes tractor exhibits, farm, livestock, barns, produce. To separate county fairs and agriculture is truly not Minnesota at all to even do that. So, I mean, they certainly qualify. But for a well that was overlooked on a project and later found out that it was going to cost what I think is an astronomical amount of money, I'm not going to argue with it, but nevertheless it is, and for them to come here and ask for those dollars, I guess I just have to throw that back at this committee. You have the authority to do that, but you may want to be careful for opening up that kind of a door. That's my only caution.
Senator Olson.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Engelbretson, forget about who the overall project is. This is clean water, and that's why we have rules and want these wells properly sealed. And I think somebody earlier said that it is within that constitutional amendment to deal with the sealing of wells. It just happened to be discovered in an unusual place and be a rather unique project. And I think even the amount that is being proposed may well not do the whole job, but may be able to do enough that it doesn't stop the project from going forward. I think that it's a stretch not to think that this doesn't fit within the constitutional aspect of the whole of the whole legacy, because clean water was a part of it, and wells are certainly been a concern here for some time, and that's what they're attempting to do responsibly.
Senator Hand.
Madam Chair, and I'm listening to the discussion. I'm just wondering, maybe Council wants to comment as well, but we have this section that's being referred to on page 44, Department of Health, and there are four paragraphs. They all have to deal with drinking water and wells and water sources, drinking water sources, county well index. It seems to me possible that you could construe that this thing that's involved with this project would fall into the general category of issues being covered in that particular section of the bill. There is about, $6 million being appropriated over the biennium for those things. I can't recall exactly what the amount of money that they were looking to add to this. If it needs to be added to that $6 million, or if you just say as a part of that $6 million, you do. I just am wondering that if that's, rather than creating an exception and dealing with it as something exceptional, to somehow include it, and if you need language to say, notwithstanding the way the rules are currently being done, that this would be permitted in this case. It would seem to me that possibly might be one way to do this. And I'm just asking the question if that's a direction the committee wants to go.
Yes. Senator Magnus.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I think I agree with Senator Langseth's comments earlier. This is an extraordinary circumstance, and I think they've that the parties involved have done all they can to rectify this situation. It's a horrifying amount of money, Senator Ingebretson. I agree with that. But also, it's something with clean water. And if this doesn't deal with clean water, I don't know what the rest of the bill does. Because I got questions about a lot of the rest of the bill. But I think, you know, when you got direct pipelines into your aquifers, you got to protect that. So I support Senator Bonhoeff's amendment. I think what we should do is have the staff and Senator Ingebretson and the others work on some language between now and the floor. And let's not spend 2 hours in the committee here writing it. Let's have those folks do it, get together the Department of Health and figure it out. I'd like to support Senator Bonhoeff's amendment to include it for now, because I feel comfortable. Everyone's done their work that they need to do, and comfortable that this was an extraordinary circumstance. And we're going to have those, and let's move on. We can't debate them all day, every day, and something comes up here. So.
Senator Ingebretson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to just caution the folks that the dollars are very clear. It's to protect, enhance, and restore. And the well has already been done. Well has already been shut off. This is simply for the removal. So is this protecting? Is it enhancing? Is it restoring? If it is, then it qualifies. But if it doesn't,
protecting.
It's simply pulling it out. So I'm at the mercy of the committee. I'm fine if you want to work on it. I would certainly go along with that. However, I just caution members that moving forward.
Senator Higgins, you've been waiting?
Well, I think it's protecting the aquifer. So I think it clearly falls into the protect, restore, and whatever you said, Senator Ingebretson. In the amendment, Senator Ingebretson, did you put this money someplace else? If so, we need to add
Senator Higgins,
whatever that is.
If the amendment goes, we would have to delete 1.2 and 1.3 because the money did go into another fund that has to do with septics or
SSTS, I think, maybe.
Yeah.
So the amendment would have to be.
They would have to come out together.
Lines 2 and 3. Okay.
Senator Ingebretson.
So, Madam Chair, you know, I'm certainly get the drift from the members here that this is the thing to do. So, I'm certainly okay with it. Let's go ahead and vote on it, move it on. That's fine with me.
Okay. And it was your original, Senator Bonhoeff's original amendment.
Yes.
And it would have to be lines 1.2 and 1.3 of the A6 amendment would be deleted.
Yes.
In order to leave the money that is originally in the bill as is.
Madam Chair, so moved.
Okay. Any further discussion on that? If not, all in favor of Senator Bonhoeff's amendment to delete 1.2 and 1.3 of the A6 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion does prevail, and the amendment is adopted to the amendment.
Okay.
Senator Cohen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of other questions, Senator Ingebretson, about the A6 amendment before we vote on it. First, I note that in the amendment, you reduced the money that you had appropriated in your committee originally to the AMPER stations. And I'm a little bit curious about that. And I think if I note correctly, I think you give the same amount to the AMPER stations as you did 2 years ago, as we did 2 years ago. And that raises the concern, Madam Chair, that you know this constitutional amendment, maybe I can offer a little bit of history. A lot of new members and so on the committee. This constitutional amendment was basically put together started in 2004, but basically 2005, 2006, 2007 in this committee, the Senate Finance Committee. Not House Ways and Means, House Appropriations, whatever. The Senate Finance Committee is where the amendment was put together. And the anticipation was the discussion, and also during the course of the campaign in 2008, the public campaign, the discussion was that if we ever got back to a time of more stable budgets, the programs affected by this amendment, the environmental programs, the habitat preservation programs, the clean water programs, arts and cultural programs, once you got past K-12, health and human services, higher education, to a lesser extent corrections, everything else gets scraps. And so the anticipation was that there would be a growth in the sales tax revenue, but it wouldn't necessarily go to new programs. it would go to increasing some of the areas that were intended by the committee in those years, coupled with the discussion during the public campaign. So I understand, Madam Chair and Senator Engelbrechtson, you might say, well, the AMPER stations get the same amount of money. My question is why they don't get more money. And the reason I mention AMPERs is I think that's an important part of this constitutional amendment in terms of the public broadcasting aspect of this. You're talking about smaller stations, primarily outstate radio stations, that if you take away public dollars, don't exist. They would have a hard time and a struggle to exist. And that's why incremental increases in what was going to AMPERs make all the difference to those smaller stations. And so, Madam Chair, Senator Richardson, that's why I have a question as to why there might not be more money for the AMPER stations, not the same money.
Senator Ingersoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that, Senator Cohen. And members, I have to remind you that this is a this is something that, you know, frankly, each and every one of the folks that are getting dollars here, last biennium, this coming biennium, and I don't know, what would that be, about 12 more bienniums coming up, should not be counting this on their as their fix-all. Before this amendment came down, there was no money. These are new dollars. And we thought it was fair to treat them both the same, frankly. NPR got 2.65 last year, and AMPERS was the same. Instead of splitting the difference there and giving one over the other, powering one over the other, we thought it was fair to both stay the same. So they'll be getting the same dollars they got last biennium. We thought that was fair.
Madam Chair, that
Senator Cohen.
I suppose that's an answer to my question. I'm talking about the NPR appropriation, which was at 2.650. You know, I can make an argument for more money beyond that for NPR, but again, if we look at this as a ceiling with some of these groups, I think that goes against what I would suggest was the intent of the amendment. Again, if you go back to the discussions in 4, 5, 6, 7, and the public campaign in 8, the expectation was, again, as I indicated, that you get past the budget drivers where we're always going to be putting the money. And I don't care if we get back to the surplus days of 99, 2000, 2001. The money will still go to K-12, higher ed, health and human services, whatever we're doing, and whoever's in charge, even if you know you have concerns about how we handle health and human services and kind of the exponential growth, that's still where new money is going to go. So that's why the expectation was is that with the growth, with a steady growth in revenue from the sales tax, that some of these areas would get you know, additional money on an incremental basis. They wouldn't be capped.
Well, Senator Cohen, I don't remember during the campaign that we had any promises out there to the voters that certain programs would get X amount of dollars and it would grow as the sales tax revenue grew. I go back to Mr. Mueller's comment right at the beginning. He said there is no base budgets for these programs. And I think that is very important as we look at this, that every time we look at it, we are looking at where we the current legislature thinks the greatest needs are, and I don't know that we have to ever go back to a base at all.
Madam Chair, not unfair, but I will say there certainly was lots of discussion of that during the campaign. Having been involved during the campaign, the public campaign, I can assure you that that was discussed with many of the groups involved and with each article of what's now the constitutional amendment. That clearly was discussed.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, I think when
it was the old days,
in the old days, but I do think that a number of the groups came on board to campaign for the amendment because they had an expectation, certainly, that there would be funding for them when the appropriations were made. But I think everybody should have known that there could not have been a promise, because you can't bind future legislators, and so it isn't necessarily
rolling
a base issue. Senator Ingersoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Cohen for those comments. I think what you should know, and I'm not sure you are familiar with what's going on in the other body, and I know we don't really do our legislation according to what they're doing, but I think we're much fairer in that what they're going to do there is they're going to open all these areas up for grants to the Department of Administration, which I think is wrong. I think that takes away our opportunity to basically say where the dollars go. And again, these dollars are the same. The amendment addresses the same amount of money last year. And to Senator Cohen's point, those dollars, the dollars are actually growing here. He's right. He's corrected that. But then we've also expanded into other areas. We're looking at expanding into county fairs. We're looking at expanding into something else. That's the real, I think, the real nice part of this particular area of government is that we have the option to be able to do that, spread those dollars around throughout all of Minnesota. And publicly, I think we should send a strong message that not any one of these folks should be counting on these dollars coming every biennium. And I think if they do that, I think they're, I don't know if I would call it misguided, but I just would count it kind of poor business because they know that they are at the mercy of the legislature to change that at any given time. So I do have Mr. Tilley here who would like to talk about AMPRS if he could.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Barry Tilley. I represent the Association of Minnesota Public Educational Radio Stations, and it's a statewide group of all the larger public radio stations in Minnesota except Minnesota Public Radio. Four of those stations are in the metro area, and the other seven are spread throughout rural Minnesota. And I just want to say initially we're very appreciative of being in the bill. We very much appreciated the first year, and so far from the first biennium's appropriations, we have created and uploaded to our archive well over 2,000 programs that were designed and created especially to meet the criteria of the arts and heritage program. And we were very appreciative of being in the bill here, too, and we were looking forward to expanding some of our programming and continue to provide those programming. We were disappointed that the money was initially set aside for us was reduced to give to another public radio entity, and it was that all of us could be treated equally except at the higher dollar amount. And I want to say I'm appreciated Senator Engelbrecht working with him. He's a very great author to work with. And if there's a possible way you can find some more money on the bottom line or whatever to make up that gap, I would greatly appreciate it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Cohen.
Madam Chair, that does beg the question, though. Senator Ingebrigtsen, what do you anticipate with the 3% for each of Article 2 and Article 3, the bottom line money?
Mr. Mueller, do you know?
Mr. Mueller would have that all.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen, on page 10, the 3% leftover, or 3% fund balance for the Arts and Culture Heritage Fund is $1.618 million
Madam Chair,
after 2013.
Senator Cohen?
I'm sorry. I can read the numbers, too, but I wondered why the 3% on the bottom line, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Senator Cohen, we've done that also in the Lasard, as you well know, just to have a balance there, and in case, I think it's just, you know, just a policy. I think it's good business just to have some of those dollars on the bottom line, and not expending all those dollars. We have been able to put aside some dollars over at Lasard, and when something does come up, we have them available. That way, you're not extending yourself right out to the last dollar. Those are carried, of course, are carried over for next year, as you well know.
This money is projected, or
yes, and with sales tax receipts fluctuating, I think it's just good on our part to be able to set aside some of those dollars.
I like that idea. A little reserve set aside, perhaps, if in case the money doesn't materialize, Senator Cohen.
And Madam Chair, I don't have an amendment relative to this, but the other way you could do it would be to have language that would, on a proportionate basis, reduce grants if there was a diminishment in sales tax revenue, so that you wouldn't have a deficit within the amendment. But that's just a thought.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
And just another thank you. And Senator Cohen, I appreciate the comments here, but this is about half of what I think they do in general fund dollars. So I think we're getting the dollars out there, and at least we think we are, and not keeping a lot of it back. So.
Senator Cohen.
Madam Chair, can I shift gears to another question?
Certainly.
And this, Senator Ingebrigtsen, is an issue that I thought you and I might have discussed in passing. I know Senator Olson had talked about this, and I think also Senator Koch.
Senator Cohen, is it still on the A6 amendment?
Yes. Okay. Yes, Madam Chair, I'm sorry. And it's not on the A6 amendment as such, but it's on what I think, I don't know if it's an omission to the A6 amendment, because I thought it would be included in the A6 amendment. I think Senator Olson and I had talked about this at one point, and that's the question of the 40% versus the 30% grants to the regional arts councils, and then I think also the arts education collaborations number as opposed to the arts and arts access initiatives line.
Senator Cohen, I think I'd like to finish dealing with the A6 amendment because that would be a separate amendment potentially. Senator Olson?
Madam Chair, I think there was a felt that there had been an understanding with Senator Ingebrigtsen that some of that might be dealt with in this, and when it didn't appear, that's what's raised the issue.
Okay.
Yeah.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Madam Chair, to the amendment, I do have Rich Neumeister who would like to comment to the A6 amendment if I could. He's asking to make some comments. So.
Mr. Neumeister.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Rich Neumeister. It's foreign for me to come to Finance Committee meetings when there's an amendment that does something with money, and secondly, which I think has an impact on the citizens and the people of Minnesota, I think it's important to hear some comments in that regards. The issue that I'm talking about is the amendment that on A6, which goes from line 18 to 125. Takes away from the Department of Education, the administration, and also the granting on a formula basis to all the regional library systems, like which I'm sure a lot of you have heard of, Arrowhead, Northwest, Lake Agakis, Kichigami, East Central, Great River, Plum Creek, Selco. And I'm familiar with some of them because I spend some time up in St. Cloud Lake with Great River. One thing, what the amendment does, it takes away from a grassroots level where decisions are made in a decentralized way for grants that can go for the history and culture and arts politically in that general area where there's a lot of sharing, number one, a lot of communication. Number two, what you're doing, you're then saying in this proposed amendment, well, we're going to have everything from St. Paul with the arts board. And if you take a look, and one of the great things about having a computer now this year, I can get information real quick about the state's arts boards. There's very, from my personal perspective and just a real quick evaluation of who's on the state's arts board, there's not a lot of folks who have library backgrounds or history backgrounds, a lot of folks with a lot of arts backgrounds. There's someone that was a member of the Hennepin County Board system. But that's another concern I have. Secondly, when you cut out the Department of Education, where they have had, and Senator Olson, Madam Chair, is very familiar, and other folks in the Education Committee are familiar with the Education Department's history with libraries. It's been like that for decades, and how they work in a community-oriented type fashion. To where you cut them out, other than to consult with the state's art board to come up with criteria, I think is the wrong direction to go. Now, being somewhat astute, I think that I am, just being around here for a number of years, we're all aware of the situation that happened where the other body is getting involved in about $45,000. Now, I hope we are not reacting to that by Mr. Gaiman getting $45,000, and I know the librarian director very well. She felt horrible and all those kinds of things. And now we're doing some sort of thing. Oh, let's this body get into all the thing that should not be. I think if you look at the merits of the amendment, it is not good. If you look at the ability of where to get down to grassroots community communication, which has had a proven track through the regional boards and doing some kind of formula, And to finally, just to make comment, to where the chairman says to have money go through all Minnesota, that happens, at least with the current practice, where on some type of formula basis, everyone in Minnesota gets part of that $3 million. That's not necessarily going to be guaranteed under the auspices, at least of how I read it, unless some things are done to deal with that under the new scheme that's being proposed. So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I would like to suggest to you that you keep the current language that's in the bill. Secondly, if there's some need for some more accountability or something because of what has publicly been in the newspaper, do that. But I think the people of Minnesota lose something by doing the approach that you're going to do that's being proposed in the A6 amendment.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just, I don't know, maybe Mr. Neumeister, the author of the bill, I'm looking at your amendment. I'm looking at the language in the original bill. Am I correct in understanding that the difference, the money is the same? If I look at lines 1.19 to 1.22, it's being distributed to the same bodies that are currently getting the money would be eligible to get it. It seems to me, and maybe I'm incorrect, Senator Ingebrigtsen, but it's the mechanism by which the funds are distributed that has changed. It's no longer going through the department. I'm not quite sure from your amendment, these grants, who is the grantee, but could you clarify that for us, Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Hahn. Yes, the same amount of money is going to go out that's in the bill. It's just going to be a competitive grant system coming from the, as the amendment states, from the Arts Board, and upon consultation with the Commissioner of Education, as it says on line 123. So I feel very comfortable with that. They're more able to do, used to doing those types of competitive grants. The same amount of money is going to go out, and I might remind you that the folks at the Arts Board that distribute the dollars that is allotted to them over the years has been a statewide grant system. So I don't think there's any danger that it's not going to be a statewide grant system under their criteria.
Senator Cohen.
Well, Madam Chair, first, I had nothing to do with the promulgation of the amendment, have not been involved with this. But I will tell you, if you'll allow me, Madam Chair, this makes the point relative to the discussion a couple of minutes ago, because I happen to be very sympathetic to the criticism made relative to that $45,000 grant. The libraries were not involved with this, the promulgation of this constitutional amendment whatsoever. But what happened was, in the other body, it was decided, well, here's a good idea. I really like the libraries. How about if we give X number of dollars to the libraries? They weren't prepared for distribution of the money. They had no plan for distribution of the money. They'd never expected to get the money. And so it was just free money out there. And it leads then to the consequence of, say, what happened with this particular grant that's had the most significant attention paid to it. But it was a system not prepared whatsoever to participate. And, of course, now we're perpetuating because it was there before, so I guess we'll give it out again. And I'll tell you, I've heard criticism from members of the majority for a long time when members of the majority were in the minority of how the previous majority would do that kind of thing with public dollars. What the heck? It's just there. Give it out. And this is a real good example of that.
So, Senator Cohen, are you speaking in favor of this amendment or against this portion of the amendment?
Madam Chair, I'm not taking, well, like I said, I didn't, a couple of things. I wasn't involved with, like I said, the promulgation of this part of the amendment. Certainly trying to give some substance to library grants would make a lot of sense given the history of the past 2 years. But that's why I suggest that when this constitutional amendment becomes a free-for-all, it has some of these unintended consequences. And maybe maybe what Senator Ingebrigtsen is proposing is a better approach of utilization of this part of it. We'll see what happens. But because of, you know, again, the libraries, I'm a supporter of the libraries, had no idea they were going to get this money. And we're not prepared for using it. And that's what has led to some of the controversy.
And I'm curious, too. We have the Arts Board, which is a statewide board, has representatives from all over the state on it. But who among the library system doled out the resources? I guess I'm not sure about how that was handled.
Well, Madam Chair, I can tell you because I was chairman of the conference committee. Senator Ingebrigtsen was a member of the conference committee. In the compromise with the House, it was agreed to appropriate money for the libraries. The distribution was to take place through, as Mr. Neumeister testified, the regional library system. And I think some places were prepared to do it, some places weren't.
I see we have our friend from the library system here.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Elaine Keefe, and I represent the Minnesota Library Association, and I can answer some of the questions that have been raised. The money that was appropriated...
Turn the mic just a little bit. You're feeding in and out.
Sorry. Oh, is that better? Okay. Sorry about that. The money that was appropriated in the initial legacy bill 2 years ago for regional public libraries was distributed based on the same or using the same formula that's in statute that is used for the funding that goes to regional public libraries as part of the education budget. And that's a four-part formula. The largest portion of it is based on population, 57.5%. There is a portion that's based on property values, so tax capacity, basically. There's a portion that's based on that's divided equally between the 12 regional public library systems, and then there is a portion that is based on area. And that was the same formula that was used to distribute the legacy funds. There was a question asked about whether the same entities were eligible to receive this money, and actually this language is a little bit different. The money that was appropriated for the current biennium was distributed to the 12 regional public library systems. What this language says in the amendment is, beginning on line 19, is eligible libraries include any public library, so that means an individual public library could apply, as I read it, a regional public library system, which are the entities that receive the money currently, or a multi-county, multi-type library system, and they have not been eligible in the past. And those are seven regional entities that are under a separate statute that are organizations of lots of different kinds of libraries. So their membership includes public libraries, but also school libraries, higher education libraries, state government libraries, and what we call special libraries, which can be in corporations, hospitals, law libraries, medical libraries, you know, lots of different kinds of libraries. So all of those are eligible to be members of multi-county, multi-type libraries. So this is an expansion of the breadth of the libraries that would be eligible to compete for these grants.
I need to go away.
Senator Bono.
Madam Chair, based on Mr. Neumeister's comments, now as I'm aware that we're actually taking the jurisdictional authority, it appears, from the Commissioner of Education with regard to this money, and a system that's been used for many, many years, and moving it to the Arts Board to determine who gets what. And so I'm wondering, was there a problem with having the Commissioner of Education be in that role? What is the reason for making that change? And has the Commissioner made any comments? What is the department's view? How does the library system feel about that change? Seems like this is a pretty complicated change that hasn't really been aired.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you. And I guess the difference would be a competitive grant system versus a formula. That would be the difference, a competitive grant system versus a formula. So,
well, Madam Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, not necessarily. You could still, if you wanted to have a competitive grant program, you could still do it that way, and which... In your bill, I believe it does. It you already switched it to that, but the difference was the Commissioner of Education had the jurisdictional authority over it versus this going to the Arts Board. So I'm just wondering what made you decide to make that change, and what do the people affected by that change have to say about it?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to that point, and I think Senator Cohen probably addressed it, that issue quite well. But what I can tell you is that these are heritage dollars. These are not general fund dollars. This is a relatively new program. I'm not going to sit here and go for the bait that, that we're here to try and fix what happened over on the House side or whatever the comments are over there. I'm not going to do that. We just felt it would be a better place to be administered through somebody who's been doing competitive grants, and we thought the Arts Board would be the place. However, you should also continue to understand that the same amount of dollars will go out. It's not going to change that.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It seems to me, by what Ms. Keefe described, the ease of distribution is fairly simple for the Department of Education. I think Tom Melcher in finance would just plug this into the formula that's already used to disperse the monies that go out to those regional, that one particular category's classification of libraries, which covers the whole, which covers the whole state. And it, I don't think, is the metro region included in that, or is it, it's the economic development regions, essentially, isn't it?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, yes, the boundaries of the 12 regional libraries are based on the economic development boundaries, as I understand it. And the metro area is one of those 12 regional public library systems.
And Madam Chair, then it becomes the responsibility for this segment of the money that they received to follow the direction in the statute, and whether it's grants or programs that they organize, they are responsible for that distribution of those monies. Versus this is a huge expansion of eligibility for the same dollars that is now would be under through a grant making process through the State Arts Board. And while I have a great respect for what the State Arts Board does and how they handle that distribution of resources, this is quite different than what the other was, and whether it's better or worse, I think Mr. Neumeister has expressed some opinion that it can lead to a dissemination that's very far apart than a broader assurance that the benefit of these monies would serve everyone in the state.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you. To Senator Olson's point, just I guess it depends on whether you want it to be a competitive grant system or a different system that the Department of Ed has with regards to formulas. I mean, competitive grants, I think, are important. And I might remind Senator Cohen that he did a great job on this conference committee as chairing that last time I was here. Once again, though, I have to remind him that I was just there. I was not part of the committee. I was charged with oversight of what was going on in that committee, but I mean that jokingly. But no, I was not a member of the conference committee, but I was there the whole time. No.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just I guess I would just comment in favor of it. I think Senator Cohen makes a good point about kind of just doing things because they've been done in the past. I think Senator Ingebrigtsen makes a good point that a competitive process is not a bad thing, maybe a very good thing. And I think Ms. O'Keefe's point about the libraries that qualify under this amendment are more, but and I'm not as familiar as maybe some others are with the legacy dollars, but if the legacy dollars are going to be used for libraries, why do we arbitrarily say only certain libraries can use those and other libraries can't be eligible to get grants? So I guess I don't have any problem with this section of the amendment, Senator Ingebrigtsen. I think that if we're going to put funding to the libraries, this does continue to do that, does it in a slightly different way. I'm not sure if there's any problems with the current way, but I would argue that this would say, well, we're going to do it a different process, use a competitive system, and let more entities be eligible to apply. And I don't think there's anything bad with that.
And again, members, just to remind you, this is every year. This is a work in progress. It all comes back again, and if this doesn't work, we address it in a different fashion. But I think it's just a good idea to keep searching for the best way to put those dollars out. And so long as the same amount of dollars are going to go out, I think it's a good way to do it.
Well, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I see a lot of benefits to giving it out through grants, but my only concern would be how proportionally they'll be distributed throughout the state. The grant makers would have to be very aware of that issue as they approve the grants to make sure that all parts of the states receive some benefit from it. I think the State Arts Board has worked in that direction over the years, certainly. They do make an effort to do that. But that would be potentially an issue. Senator Bonoff?
Madam Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I still feel as though a couple of my questions haven't been addressed. One is, why couldn't the Commissioner of Education be responsible for distributing it on a competitive grant process? And if your answer is because you want it to be broader and include these corporate libraries or this or that, I don't know. I'm not sold on that. But you're the author, so I leave that to you. But I still don't understand why. What is the problem that we're addressing in moving it from that jurisdiction to the Arts Board when we know the Department of Education has experience, has the financial oversight capacity to work with the libraries? I'm just not understanding what the value is of moving it. And I support a competitive grant process. I am for that versus the formula, so I'm not disputing that. I just don't know why we're moving it. And then I still haven't heard whether or not the libraries have a view on that and the Department of Education has a view on it.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, to her point. I guess if you want it formula-based, I guess that's the real question here, whether you want it formula-based. And if it's going to be formula-based, as they've already said, that's the way they're going to distribute the money, and they have, unless I'm wrong.
Well, that's what the
then I think
said.
It's going to be going kind of to the same people all the time versus if it's competitive grants. I think more people have an opportunity for competitive grants than they do with formulas.
But
Senator Bonner.
Madam Chair, it was distributed formula-based because that's what was in the law. You could change that and have it be distributed on a competitive grant process still with the authority being through the Commissioner of Education.
Senator Bonner, I wonder if we get a fiscal note from the Department of Education then. I'm a little concerned about that.
Okay.
I don't know if, is anyone here from the Department of Education would like to speak to this issue?
And if I could, just make one final comment with regards to her, Senator Bonoff's issue here, is that the Arts Board has been doing this for many, many years, and they're very good at what they do. We just felt it more comfortable to put the dollars there. And again, if this doesn't work, we have the authority, as you know, to change this back and put it someplace else. But I just think it's a place we can look at expanding off of.
Senator Higgins.
Madam Chair, is somebody from the Arts Board here? If we're adding $6 million to their grants process, do they need more staff? How much of the $6 million do they take for administrative costs? Is that more or less than the Department of Education would take? Do we know any of those answers?
Is there anyone from the State Board of Arts you would like to come up and address Senator Higgins' questions about whether or not there's any appropriation for you to take this money and distribute it?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Sue Jens. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota State Arts Board. And I just said to the author that I'm a little surprised. I hadn't seen this language ahead of time, but he said, you do such a good job that we would be feeling comfortable having the Arts Board manage these funds. The question specifically about how would we manage them, what sort of infrastructure would we need to do that, I don't know that I have a specific answer to that, but we certainly do have experience managing statewide grant programs. We and the Regional Arts Councils together have a system in place that allows us to look at the entire state. So we would use existing infrastructure that we have. I can't speak to specifically how much staff or how many people or how many dollars. Certainly there would be some needs because this would be a new area for us. We would need to create new kinds of grant programs, But again, that's something that we're very familiar with doing. We've created at least seven new sets of grant programs this past 2 years when the legacy dollars were passed. So we do have experience in that area. Certainly would want to work with the Department of Education on what they thought would be the best practices, as we would also want to work with the Historical Society and others, because as we note in the bill, this isn't just arts funding, it would be arts, history, and cultural heritage funds. So there would need to be some collaboration with other agencies as well.
So, Madam Chair.
Senator Higgins.
So the Arts Board doesn't know, having just found out about this, whether they would need to add to staff. And I guess my other question is, do we have anything in this bill that sets a limit for administrative costs for the departments, Senator Ingebretson? Or do they just do that for whatever's necessary on items like this?
Mr. Mueller has an answer.
Mr. Mueller jumped up, so he would know?
Well,
Senator Ingebretson?
Yes, I do know that the Heritage Fund, the Outdoor Heritage Fund, is a 1% administrative, not to exceed 1%, and I believe that's been at about 0.5%. Been used up from year to year. That's the Lesard Sams. I think that's also going to carry on a conversation when we get a little bit later on in our discussions with the with all the bills with regards to the clean water money as well. So I guess on page 71 addresses that, unless otherwise specified in this article, an entity that receives money through a direct appropriation in this article may spend no more than 5% of the money for administration direct costs or their institutional overhead charges. So there's your answer. More than five.
Mr. Neumeister.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I just wanted to finish a comment. I wanted to say, in response to what Senator Cohen said, that this was money just sort of laid out. I'm viewing it from a very general public perspective. Even though I'm here a lot, I get out there and I talk to a lot of people. The library, and particularly when you take the four things, heritage, all, you know, talk about heritage. It is the libraries in all your communities that are the fountain part of history, of the heritage of the community. So with some of the folks, I remember Mary Murphy and other folks talking about, you know, one of the things they went to the libraries is because that's where a lot of the history, the heritage, not necessarily maybe in the arts. And secondly, through the formula process, whether it be good or bad or ill, at least I can say that in the Great River area, because I hang out in Sauk Rapids a lot, I go over to St. Cloud because my brother lives up there, it's all over the place from Sartell to whatever. I mean, little programs through the formula. Everybody gets a piece of the pie, particularly through the regional distribution rather than, you know, way down in St. Paul, you know, do they know anything about us? And I also have seen that evident here in the area of the Twin Cities, how MELSA has distributed all the money, all the little libraries have gotten. I just participated, just observing and all that, about how St. Paul is going to different branches talking about the history of the Hams Brewery and some other things. And it's like that in all of your communities. So, Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you very much for giving me this unique opportunity to come to the Finance Committee, which I very seldom do. The big one, you know, where all the bills go to. But I do think that some of the questions that have been raised is maybe just to rethink about, it could be a merging of the thing, maybe competitive grants with some guidance or, you know, or whatever it might be. But I think at least there's some discussion just to review a little bit and maybe just pause and think. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Have a good day.
Thank you for your input, Mr. Neumeister. Senator Cohen?
Madam Chair, maybe we should give it to the Historical Society then.
All cultural programs. Did members? Senator Cohen?
Well, Madam Chair, if there are no amendments, Senator Olson and I had the question earlier about what we think is an omission on the amendment. It's not in the amendment. So I don't know, but Senator Ingebretson didn't have a chance to respond to that. So then we dashed into the other discussion.
Do you want the question repeated, Senator Ingebretson?
Madam Chair, we're still on the A6 amendment.
We are still on it. And Senator Cohen, and I agree that if it's not in the amendment now and no one has an amendment for it, it can be offered as a separate amendment to the bill. So I think we could just go back to the A6 amendment.
Certainly. Madam Chair, if I'm certainly open to other amendments. I know there's going to be some, so I certainly understand that. But this would get it in order to move forward. Whatever the wish of the chair.
So is there any other discussion on the A6 amendment as amended? Remember, we took out lines 1.2 and 1.3. If not, all in favor of the A6 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. Senator Cohen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Senator Ingebrigtsen, and the issue that I raised, and I think Senator Olson concurred, I want to speak for Senator Olson, but I believe Senator Olson concurred, on this question of the 40% versus the 30% on line 61.8. Because I thought there had been some discussion. I had thought, and again, I don't think I talked, Madam Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, I would have talked to you only in passing. I know there had been some discussion with Senator Koch, and again, I don't want to speak for Senator Olson, but I think also with Senator Olson. So that's why I wondered about the 61.8 language.
Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Madam Chair and Senator Cohen, on 61.8, obviously on page 61, it was 30% last year. We just thought it was just a little more fair way of dealing with it at this point. Really not a whole lot more than that, 30% versus 40% distribution.
Senator Cohen?
Madam Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, but I'd suggest it's not a fair way. We've had a lot of discussion about distribution systems and all the rest of it. The distribution system for the arts has been one that's been in place for many, many years and supported by everybody. So that I would suggest, and I want to speak for either the State Arts Board or the Regional Arts Councils, I don't think the Regional Arts Councils are asking for 40% at all. There's some of us on this committee, Senator Olson would be a member, myself, some others, who are strong supporters of public support for the arts. But I've never believed that there ought to be a system where you take away the private support for the arts. And with the regions, which also includes the metropolitan area, if you put a 40% figure in, you're going to have some organizations where basically they'll be entirely public supported or very close to that. And I just don't think that's a wise way to go. I am strongly, strongly supportive of making sure there's significant dollars that goes to outstate Minnesota and goes to the smaller arts organizations, the level three arts organizations. But again, if you substitute what's been a system that historically has worked very, very well, then you kind of turn the thing upside down. And you'll create, I won't say warfare within the system, but you'll certainly create a lot of, more than angst. And I think one of the strengths of the Minnesota system has been you have had for years, separate from the dollars involved, you have had for years, and I had nothing to do with this, you've had unity between metropolitan and outstate, between big and small. Once in a while, you get a couple of outliers. But over the years, there's been a unity, and that's where other states have had significant problems, where you have a large group wants some more, a bigger share of the pie, so they go hire a lobbyist. Or some geographic entity wants a bigger share of the pie, they hire a lobbyist. That's never been a problem here in the state of Minnesota. By changing that percentage, which had been previously agreed to, we'd start down that road. Now, I wasn't somebody who put that system together. Mr. Rebin could testify to it. I know, Senator Olson, you've authored some of the legislation this year. And again, I thought there had been some discussion. I can't speak to this, Madam Chair. I thought there had been some discussion that the change would be made. So I can't, but I can't speak to that part of it.
Sir, do you want to speak to that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Larry Redman. I'm here representing Minnesota Citizens for the Arts, which is the association of all the 1,400 arts groups throughout the entire state, including all the regional arts councils. We have been for many, many years the primary advocate for the unified effort of the arts community throughout the state. I guess I'd like to, in regard to the 30.40%, Senator Cohen is correct. There is a well-honed and much deliberated policy but an agreement between all of the arts organizations through the state that that 30% distribution is the right number. With respect, Senator Ingebretson, who's been a great pleasure to work with, we think that that is the right number. I think substantively it's important for me to point out, beyond just the fact that you have agreement throughout the state on that number, which I think is not without significance, given the very wide group this is, but that there can be a temptation to understand the regional arts councils as being a geographic distribution. It's not. There are every portion of the state, the metropolitan area, the regional, the rural areas, various other urban centers throughout the state are all represented. The real distinction between the funding for the regional arts council system and the state arts board has to do with size of organization. And so the 30% really is dealing with what we think is the responsible need and the responsible involvement from the state in regard to that 30%. Now, it's very important to understand that within that remaining portion, the other 60% that the state arts board takes very, very capable charge of, that is for a variety of funding. It's certainly for funding of organizations, some of which are in the metropolitan area, some which are not, but it's everywhere. For instance, within that program is a state touring program that takes organizations from the metropolitan area and sends them out state. And, by the way, it works the reverse direction, too. So by changing those numbers, in some ways, you're actually reducing the amount of touring. Well, you would be reducing the amount of touring that would be going out state. So I think while the intention may well be to try to kind of give it a jump start for the regions, they're not asking for that, and I'm here representing them. And secondly, we think in regards to really distributing arts throughout the state, the formula that was before you before at 30% really serves every corner of the state correctly as they want to be.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I was just trying to sort through here with a different terminology because I know that that is the if that action was taken that jeopardized some of the larger organizations that I know I've seen the presentations of what they do in terms of sending programs and professionals out into the various communities around the state. It's the funds they get through the legacy that they use to do that. And so if you put a crimp in that, you are in fact actually having a negative, as I think you've pointed out, on the that dispersion and that working together between metro or large arts organizations with the regional areas and the experiences that they have access to. So I wish that you wouldn't be meddling with that because I think it's worked. And when you have an organization with the citizens aspect of it, which is statewide, as well as the arts board itself, let it work. We have enough things where we're trying to resolve disagreements and difference. We don't have that here, and so why would we change it?
Madam Chairman, if I may, to Senator Olson's comment, Senator Olson, to that very, very point in a very specific way, in prior testimony before the Senate, we presented an example of where the Minnesota Opera, which is based in the Twin Cities, had collaborated with a group in Alexandria, Minnesota, with the very school programs and whatnot there. The two had come together and done an entire program up there that was in the schools, in the community, and so forth. So we took a major arts organization that happened to be domiciled in the Twin Cities, tied it together with local interests. That came out of the portion that was at the State Arts Board, and in fact, that sort of activity, which is widespread, this is not a unique circumstance, would be, we think, deserved by that number.
Is there any other comment or anyone? There really is not an amendment before us.
You,
Senator Cohen?
Go ahead.
Well, Madam Chair, it's a simple amendment. On line 61.8, I'd move to strike 40 and make it 30.
Further discussion on that amendment, then.
And Madam Chair, would hope Senator Ingebretson might consider supporting it.
Senator Ingebretson.
Madam Chair and members, I've got my rural members looking at me now. And you know, and to be fair, I really don't think anything has been broken here. It's just that, again, it was brought to the committee in this form. 30% certainly, and I understand the concept of the larger organization coming out to rural Minnesota and certainly getting a portion of that 70%, which is basically, one would think, at least reading the bill, that it's going to the metro suburb areas. But I understand it, and I appreciate that. So, members, I would accept that as a friendly amendment.
And all in favor of Senator Cohen's...
Madam Chair, could you repeat the amendment?
On line 61.8, where it says 40% right at the beginning of that sentence, Senator Cohen is moving to change it to 30%.
And, Madam Chair, what's the effect of that again?
Senator Mueller, I was wondering that in dollar amounts, or Mr. Mueller, in dollar amounts, what's the difference between 40 and 30%?
Madam Chair, looking on the spreadsheet, and this percentage does not apply to the admin part of the appropriation. So we're looking at about $44 million or so. So 30% of that is a little over $12 million as opposed to 16.
Members understand the implication? Are there any further questions? If not, all in favor of the oral amendment on 61.8, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Further discussion on the bill?
I do have an amendment.
Senator Olson has an amendment.
Yeah.
The A3 amendment?
She's got an amendment. So the A3 amendment.
Nope.
Senator Olson, do you want to explain your A3 amendment?
Yes. This is the issue. The A3 amendment addresses the issue of the distribution between the DNR state parks and the metro parks, and I think the grant program that is used primarily. It is used for regional parts, outstate, and non-state parks. The present law has DNR getting 43%, and all but three of their parks are outstate. The metro parks get 43%, and the grant program gets 14%, which primarily funds outstate, as I said, non-DNR parks. The present Senate position, which is in the bill, reduces that to 37% for DNR, 37% for the metro parks, and the grant program to 26%, which is totally restricted to outstate. And what this amendment does, it doesn't go back to 43, it goes back to 42% for the DNR and the metro parks, and leaves at 16% the grant program, which primarily funds outstate non-DNR parks. And I would like to, I've got a little handout here in terms of some of the comparison, both of amounts, visits, dollars, the whole business, if there's somebody that...
Senator Olson,
You know, I just I'm uncomfortable with pitting Greater Minnesota and the metro area, and I'm afraid this does that. Not my amendment. My amendment is trying to get back on a more even keel, because the metro area generates about 2/3 of the revenue that's in this legacy pot that we're distributing. The metro parks serve approximately 41 million visitors per year. Well, the non-DNR state outstate parks serve less than 1 million.
Thank you.
And the DNR state parks serve 9 million. So there's a lot of usage. There are metro area people that love to visit Greater Minnesota parks, but I believe the same is true in reverse as well. The metro parks budgets are 90% funded by local property taxes. And the metro parks have clearly identified and prioritized projects that meet the regional or statewide significance criteria in the law. And the allocation in this bill completely ignores these pertinent factors, in my view. And under this amendment, outstate parks will still get more than they are presently receiving. So there are a number of people here that I think can speak to this amendment. But I would appreciate very much if we wouldn't feed wars between metro and rural in an important area like this, and that we would keep them at least. This is brings it about to a 50-50. You know, our population and the amount we contribute exceeds that. But we're just saying bring it to a 50-50. So that's why I'm offering this amendment. Are there some folks here that would like to address it?
Are there, Senator Robertson?
Madam Chair, thank you, Senator Olson, for the for bringing up the discussion here. We do have some for and against. Maybe we could have them testify. But I certainly understand. You want to. It's Senator Olson's amendment, so we'll just do the pro of this and do the latter later. Madam Chair, that's certainly up to you.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I believe Mr. Sullivan and Mr. Thiemig would from Dakota and Scott County Parks would like to speak.
Madam Chair.
Senator Langsa.
Senator Olson, the 16% under your amendment then isn't exclusively for rural. It could be both, right?
Yes, but predominantly that does go to rural. It just doesn't restrict it.
Doesn't specify that, though.
So, Senator Olson, it doesn't restrict it to rural like the current language in the bill does, but you're saying it predominantly goes to rural because that's where more of the facilities are, or why would it be the case?
Because it right now it primarily funds outstate non-DNR parks. It goes to the region, some of the regional parks that exist in the rest of the state. And Senator Ingerbertson.
To Madam Chair, to her amendment, so Senator Olson, the 16%, which is the governor's proposal, would include in the regional parks, metro parks could apply for that as money as well?
I believe they could.
That's exactly the way it is right now, and the only the difference is it's 14% now. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Does anyone know how much the metro parks get of the 14%?
I think somebody here probably
knows. Maybe if you want to answer that question before you give your testimony.
Sure. Madam Chair, my name is Mark Thiemig. I am with Scott County Parks. And in the last grant funding around the last biennium, of the 14%, approximately 80% of that went to the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks, so 20% stayed in the metro. That 20%, I believe if you take out the solar grants, which were primarily metro programs, 88% of the funds went to Greater Minnesota, and that was information that the DNR provided to us in one of our coalition meetings. So approximately 80% went to Greater Minnesota.
Okay. And welcome to our committee, Mr. Thiemig, and if you would identify yourself, I don't know which one of you wants to testify first.
Well, good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Steve Sullivan. I'm the Parks Director for Dakota County. On behalf of the 10 regional park implementing agencies, we ask your support for Senator Olson's amendment. We've been in the business for 37 years. The 1974 Parks Act established the regional park system as really the state park system for the metro area. And the 58 metro parks that are within the metro area, along with the 70 state parks that are within the greater Minnesota area, have provided natural resource-based recreation for the citizens within Minnesota. A recent addition is our friends within the greater Minnesota regional park system, and the legacy plan identifies them providing recreational opportunities for those gaps within those regional areas. The amendment recommends funding for greater Minnesota parks through the state grant program, as Mark had mentioned, also to the state parks and to metro regional parks. Based on a DNR and Met Council evaluation, the current amendment would provide a 50% metro share and a 50% greater Minnesota share. So we believe that it is equitable, even keeping in mind that there's greater population within the metro area, as well as the majority, 65% of the sales tax revenue is derived from the metro area. This is similar in many ways to the biennial appropriation in 2010 and 2011 of Parks and Trails funds, where the percentage was close to this, but it resulted in a 50-50 share as well. We know that these aren't base appropriations. This committee has been clear on that. But we believe that providing equity is an important piece, and also being able to accommodate the 40 million visitors within this large metro system is fundamental. The amendment does a couple things, actually three things in particular I'd like to mention in terms of mitigating impacts. Looking at this 50-50 share approach that the amendment suggests, there would be, based on the current Senate language, there would be approximately a $750,000 cut with matching funds for our acquisition program. Some of the best of the best lands within the metro area need to be acquired still, and there still is demand for these dollars. The 2010-2011 Parks and Trail appropriation for acquisition of park inholdings, I want you to know it is all spent, and there is a waiting line for additional acquisitions within the regional system. This amendment allows for the continued acquisition of these lands. A second point is that the amendment also provides the matching funds for an array of federal grants, where the Parks and Trails funds are the matching funds. And without these funds, we have both projects and federal funds that are at risk. In the case of Dakota County, we have a $750,000 project for the Mississippi River Regional Trail that's dependent on the Parks and Trails funds as the match to this federal grant. This amendment provides for that as an example. And the last item that I'd like to speak to is the loss of the funds as a result of the current, I won't say loss of the funds, the appropriation amount based on the Senate proposal and not on the amendment also results in inadequate funds to open parks that are ready to be developed within some of the high-use areas. And the specific example I'd like to give is within Scott County, where Spring Lake Park Reserve, the park is there, the acquisition is in place, and these Parks and Trails funds, based on the amendment, would allow that to be open for public use. And so with that, Madam Chair, and your permission, we have Mark Thymick here that could conclude our presentation.
Mr. Thymick.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I had the privilege of participating in the steering committee that developed the 25-year Parks and Trails Legacy Plan that the legislature commissioned in 2009. through that process, we attended over 20 regional meetings. I think I made 15 of those, which was great because this was kind of volunteer work in addition to my job. And one of the things that the plan did is it talked about priorities but not funding decisions. So I think that's helpful, and I'll try to relay the amendment in how it relates to those priorities. One of the things that the plan did, or one of the principal outcomes of the plan, is funding should be invested in densely settled and rapidly growing areas and regional centers that lack a near-home park or trail of regional and statewide significance. So that funding, or that policy, or that priority drives the funding towards the basically St. Cloud down to the metro area. To give you an idea how that relates, in 2009, the DNR did a study. In northeastern Minnesota, there are approximately 104 parks per 1 million population. In the metro area, there are 19 regional and statewide parks per 1 million of population. And the plan recognizes the role of both the regional parks in the metro area, the state parks, and the regional parks in greater Minnesota. I'll give you a couple examples. In Baudette, when we did the public open house up there, the folks in Baudette talked about Zippel Bay being their park of importance. And because of a lot of issues, they really didn't want a lot of land acquisition, but they wanted connections and connectivity. In Bemidji, they're blessed with the Bemidji State Park and the State Trail there. One of the things that the House bill does is they help the greater Minnesota folks develop a plan to help further define their system. Another thing that I heard in this process was that there are definitely regional differences, and one of the differences is that things cost more in the metro. The folks in Baudette said, we understand land acquisition costs more in the metro. You should get it before it's gobbled up, but don't forget about us. And I think the amendments plan helps to go in that direction. Couple things, I think, in the amendment, the percentages of allocation or percentages of funding, as Senator Ingebrigtsen commented, they go up because the fund increases because it's a longer period of time. In the amendment, the increase is 15% for the DNR, 15% for the Metro, and 39% for Greater Minnesota. In the Senate version, the increases are 4% for the DNR, 4% for the Metro, and 229% for Greater Minnesota. So it's a significant increase ratio in the actual bill versus in what the amendment is proposed. So I think the parks in Greater Minnesota are for everyone, and I think they all play a role. It's just a question of, is the funding reflective of what the costs and the needs are?
Are there any questions for these testifiers? Otherwise, if there are testifiers, Senator Higgins?
Madam Chair, all justice to Mr. Sullivan, just for kicks. Is there a minimum size that a regional park has to become a regional park?
Mr. Sullivan?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, there is a minimum size. It is 100 acres.
And, Madam Chair, is there an average of the sizes of the regional parks?
Mr. Sullivan?
Madam Chair, I don't know what the average is, but in the case of Dakota County, our typical regional park ranges from 1,200 acres to 2,000 acres.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there any other questions?
Yeah.
Are there anyone who would support the position in the current bill rather than the amendment who would like to come forward and testify?
Madam Chair and members, Dan Larson here today representing two groups, the Greater Minnesota Regional Park and Trail Coalition and the Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus. So here today in support of the current language on the park and trail legacy splits, and to start off by commending the Metropolitan Park System for the great job they've done over the last 150 years of really building a superb park and trail system based on the vision that pioneers had those many decades ago. And we see the legacy plan as a great gift to greater Minnesota and an opportunity to provide some of that same vision for the rest of the state, which I think was part of what voters supported when they went to the polls and actually voted in that constitutional amendment. So we, on the one hand, we want to recognize how well they've done, and we look to them as a beacon of what could be in greater Minnesota as well. The 25-year Park and Trail Legacy Plan calls for a statewide system of regional parks and trails. But that is tough to do when the funding is neither exclusive or adequate to achieve that plan. Just taking a step back to the initial splits or the initial funding cycle, the both groups I'm representing today have had serious concerns at those levels of funding, 43% exclusive to the Department of Natural Resources, 43% exclusive to Metro Parks and Trails. And greater Minnesota was allowed to compete with metro counties for the remaining 14%. We take issue we take issue a little bit with the fact that this is being called an equitable distribution. So I want to recognize that under the amendment, there is not one dollar, not one nickel of the dollars for the statewide grants program would be dedicated to greater Minnesota. I think there was testimony already previously given, 20% of the previous 14% did go to metro counties. So, you know, not to get too much into numbers, but 80% of what was left of that 14% went to the remaining 80 counties. So we're having a hard time processing the equitability in the current plan. This was my understanding in the previous, when the previous splits were being discussed, that this was going to be an ongoing thing. And you'd be able to come back and see how things went that first funding cycle. Well, the Greater Minnesota Regional Park and Trail Coalition did not exist prior to that funding cycle. And because of those results, the group understood it needed to get itself together and have an organization at the table so that to try and counterbalance some of what they see as inequitable splits. So with that in mind, maybe one last thing is the Metro Parks make a good case of talking about numbers and talking about the plan, talking about where people come from and how many people come from. And we don't want to take anything away from that. In fact, we want to build on it. But we are a system that cannot compete in terms of head-to-head on those number-to-number basis. We're embryonic in stature. We're talking about the second funding cycle. So we have to talk about the possibilities. So we see that the better possibilities being, number one, the exclusive portion in the Senate bill under Senator Ingebrigtsen's bill, and then a percentage that's high enough we can start this plan. So I want to thank members and urge you to oppose the amendment, respectively.
Senator Higgins.
Madam Chair, the bill is before us would more than double the amount of money for the rural parks and trails, going from $8 million to $20 million. And I believe there are matching fund requirements that go along with the funds.
25%.
25%, okay. So I'm curious about what the ability of the Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails system is to provide the matching funds. Would that be property tax dollars? And are your communities on board with providing that much extra money, more than double and almost another half again in matching funds?
Mr. Larson.
Madam Chair, Senator Higgins, we haven't surveyed our membership, but our membership is supportive of the numbers to date, and so that's all I can tell you.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Higgins.
And then so tell us, talk to us a little bit about the long range plan, the Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails.
Madam Chair, Senator Higgins, I'm sorry. Again?
Long range plan for your parks and trails?
Well, there is no long range plan at this point, but we're working on it. Madam Chair, Senator Higgins, we're working on it. There are dollars, as was recently testified to in the House bill. We want to build a plan. We want to have all the things that metro counties and the metro parks have. But we're just getting started. So, Madam Chair and Senator Higgins, we do have money set aside to begin that process, but it's not there yet.
So, Madam Chair, I'm thinking, hearing this conversation, that doing the funding that is in the bill that in the bill and not in the in Senator Olson's amendment is kind of putting the cart before the horse. We have a fledgling organization that hasn't come up with a plan, but then all of a sudden would have $20 million plus another 25% in matching funds that they'd be responsible for. And, you know, if there's been no conversations with the local governments on providing the matching funds, and if there is no plan, you know, maybe giving them another 2 years to get that plan in place while providing a 50% increase in the funds is, you know, it is a good thing. I think, you know, everybody understands that they were probably stiffed the last time around, that the amount of money was smaller than it should have been. But going from $8 million to $20 million, is a big chunk, and so I kind of worry about that. I have another question, though. Mr. Larson, can you tell me I think we have something like 75 state parks in Minnesota. How many of them are in rural Minnesota?
Mr. Larson.
Madam Chair, Senator Higgins, I think all but three.
So 70 of the 73 are in rural Minnesota. And if I can find Senator Olson's sheet she had passed out, they receive about 9 million visitors. So that in combined with the regional parks really does put most of the funding still in rural Minnesota, right?
Mr. Larson.
Madam Chair, Senator Higgins, I'm glad you asked that question. That most of the state parks are in greater Minnesota, but part of the vision that we have is to create these closer-to-home regional parks that would link up with the state parks. As you may know, Madam Chair and committee, more than 50%, 54% of all the visitors to state parks come from the metro area. So we want to enhance that experience for them while giving rural Minnesotans a chance to recreate closer to home and fulfill the long-range plan that's talked about in the 25-year plan.
Mr. Larson, Senator Higgins had asked before how large a metro regional park had to be. How large does a regional park in greater Minnesota? Is there a minimum for the acreage?
Madam Chair, Chuck Wolken, Stearns County Park Director and Vice Chair for the Central Minnesota, or Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Coalition. The standard that we have used is the standard that the DNR grant program has used in the past, with a 100-acre minimum, which were standards pretty much modeled after the Metropolitan Parks and Open Space system. But there are opportunities not only in greater Minnesota, but also in the metro area, if you have a scarcity of resource or a significantly unique historical site or natural site, the acreage can be smaller.
Mr. Olkin, I was just wondering, where are most of those parks located? Are they near larger urban cores like St. Cloud and Duluth, Bemidji, or are they in the smaller communities? Where would they normally be located?
Madam Chair and committee members, many of the more developed Greater Minnesota park systems happen to be in urbanizing areas. In the city of Duluth, there are a number of parks that are properties that are 200 acres or larger that have been deemed regionally significant. Unfortunately, there haven't been funds over the last few decades to develop those. In central Minnesota, we have probably about a half a dozen regional parks, of which one is Quarry Park and Nature Preserve. That is a particular piece of property that, before we acquired that land, we came to the DNR and asked if they would establish a state park there, and the answer was no. We just got some property out by Maplewood. Oh, my gosh, what are we going to do? We don't have enough money for this. And so Stearns County, with the assistance of the state legislature, acquired that particular property. And as we look at it as a regional resource of almost 700 acres right in the St. Cloud metro area, we look at 50% of our visitors coming from White Bear Lake, from St. Paul, Maple Grove. And that's kind of the function that Greater Minnesota has had, is to try to fill the gaps, as our colleagues from the Metro Metro Parks had indicated. We feel we can fill the gaps. An example of filling the gaps would be the Lake Wobegon Trail, the Central Lake State Trail, and the Sioux Line Trail. All of those were county projects that filled a gap when rail abandonment happened, and the county stepped up to acquire and, again, to leverage state and federal funds and provide these statewide facilities. And 100% of the maintenance is taken out of property taxes from those local units of government.
Well, Mr. Wilkin, that does kind of bring up Senator Higgins' question, is if you got additional money for parks and you have to come up with a local match, the 25%, and that would all come from local property taxes. Are your communities prepared to do that? Are they going to be able to find the funds? I am just noting this because this is an annual appropriation. It changes every year. And I think Senator Higgins may have made a good point that if there's not projects currently online and we're not sure where this money would be directed toward next year, would they be prepared to handle it?
Madam Chair, I know, speaking for Stearns County, we wouldn't mind having all of it, but the communities and the counties that have been involved in our coalition over the last year are so not used to getting any funding that they've almost rolled up the tent and gone away. They have supported this funding request in the current bill because it makes up for past inequities. It allows them to get going again. And I believe that the communities that are involved in our coalition would be able to come up with the matches that are required. Typically, our matches are 50%, and we still proceed.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the desire of the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks to grow, and I think they will have continuing opportunity. This isn't the end of the legacy funding, and I do believe that it's likely to continue to grow. The pressure on the metro parks is now, and sometimes there's a need or an opportunity to add some land that rounds out a particular park, and it can be gone for development tomorrow. And the pressure, if you look at the numbers, there's a lot of pressure there. I would hope that we could, when it's more than doubled, for this time around. It demonstrates that there is a commitment to the supporting the regional parks outstate. We're not looking for exact parity. 50-50 isn't, if you look at the regional, the metro region versus greater Minnesota. We've been providing resources in many ways for greater Minnesota. But I believe we're one Minnesota. And I don't think there's a lot of complaints about doing that. But at the same time, when the pressures are here, I think for this round, we need this kind of balance of investment. And I hope that as your plan goes and you make even a stronger case, then I think that will continue to be looked at as the years go forward. Just a year ago, the Dakota Rail, one of those trails that was an abandoned railroad, beginning in Wayzata and ending in Hutchinson, which could ultimately be linked with the State Loose Line Trail and have a loop. But the Hennepin County portion was done as an asphalt trail between Wayzata and St. Bonifacius. And they anticipated maybe 75,000 would use it the first year. 250,000 came to that trail the first year. Carver County is now, I think, has worked on theirs, and is it McLeod is the next one to get to the end, but McLeod isn't part of the seven-county metro area, but they're working together to do those kinds of things. But there is great pressure. There is great pressure in the metro area, and there's also a desire to make those links. So I would appreciate if you would support this and leave this adopt this amendment for this year in order to be able to continue to move in that direction as you are ready to go and can obviously benefit from more than double of what you've had in the past.
Senator Bonhoeff, and I think we're going to be coming to a vote on this issue very soon. Our meeting will have to recess at 4:30. The Republicans have a caucus, and if we don't get done with the agenda, we'll be back after that.
So, Madam Chair, I will be brief. I do think people know how they want to vote. I just want to say that we have a House, Senate, Suburban caucus in the minority, of which I'm a co-chair, and we don't agree on much. And that's why, you know, the suburbs sometimes are challenged, because the first-ring suburbs, third-ring, you know, there's often so much disagreement. But the one thing we did agree on is that getting support for the parks in this bill was our top priority. And so I speak from that group as well, that this is something we think is very important.
Yeah, Madam Chair, if I might have one more comment. We talk, there's a reference to the lack of opportunity or missed opportunities in the metro area, and I appreciate how every acre costs four times more down there than it does in Stearns County. But we look at a project that's ready to go, has been ready to go for probably 3 or 4 years in Wright County, right off the interstate, and right next to the municipality of Monticello, that is 1,000 acres, four lakes, undeveloped lake frontage, and it's languishing because there isn't any funding available to meet that particular need. And that's just one of the projects, and I'm sure in the metro area there are a number of projects as well. But in the past, there has been little funding toward greater Minnesota. From 2002 to 2009, there was less than a million for the entire state of Minnesota and greater Minnesota. Designated for regional parks. And at this particular time, if you looked at legacy bonding, you looked at natural resources fund, and you looked at general revenue fund to the metro, you'd have about $30 to $34 million of state funds designated just for the metro area. So there are urgent needs out in greater Minnesota as well, and one sitting right beyond the boundaries of the metro.
I think everyone probably knows how they're going to vote on this amendment. Senator Ingebrigtsen, one last word.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I find it interesting how we're talking about fairness when we just got done talking about arts and how rural Minnesota, I think was treated quite fairly, actually. But 14% last year, Madam Chair and members, nobody here... they're going to shudder when I say this, but that's crumbs from the table, folks. That's crumbs from Metro Minnesota. I mean, you've got comments coming here today from Senator Higgins asking, are you sure your Metro folks can come up with a 25% match? What does that tell me? That tells me that the Metro doesn't have a problem with that 25% match. But if I'm a Metro Parks director and I see what the legislature is doing to rural Minnesota when it comes to park fairness, why would I spend any time in even trying to find those dollars? Because they're just not coming. There's nothing there. It's not at all fair. 14% was, again, an insult. 16% isn't much better. I mean, we're talking about some fairness here. We're talking 54% of the Metro people go to rural state parks. Why do they go to rural state parks? You know, we need some help in rural Minnesota to put those regional parks together so we don't have to have these huge numbers in the metro area. It can be looked at it that way, too. But the percentages that were handed down last biennium were sending a strong message to rural Minnesota. And to even make, rub a little salt in the wound, we'll go ahead and we'll open that up to metro regional parks as well, was even further an insult. So I know the House is at 40-40-20. We don't deal with what the House does, but they've seen their way to get it up to 20%. I would ask that you vote this percentage down because this isn't anywhere close to fair yet. And I appreciate Senator Olson and the folks over here talking with regards to their area, but Central Minnesota has to be represented here. Because folks like to get out of the city, and there's no incentive for rural Minnesota to move forward if they're going to be treated this fashion. So I would dearly ask you to vote the amendment down.
Okay, I think we're ready to vote. All in favor of the A3 amendment? It hasn't been amended, so all three in favor of the A3 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay.
No. Nay.
Division.
She hasn't ruled.
Well, it was a very difficult one because I heard a lot of female voices which aren't as loud as the male voices, and so I don't know. I think I will ask for division. So all those in favor, please raise your hand. All those opposed? On a vote of 7-8, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is defeated. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Members, in the interest of brevity, I know you're talking about adjourning here very soon. Are there any other questions at all? We have the Lessard folks here, the executive director from, if we could maybe at least send them on their way so they don't have to come back if you don't have any questions with regards to the first portion of the bill. Or are we leaving already? I'm sorry, I can't see the clock. I got to really bend around.
It's 10-4, Senator Ingebrigtsen. So, did you said you wanted further testimony, or you have other amendments?
No, I'm just saying that they're here. If you have any questions of them, they're certainly here and available for any questions with regards to Article 1.
Just move the bill.
Okay, I think we'll move on with discussion and additional amendments if there are any.
Sure,
Senator Cohen.
Madam Chair, I'm sure Senator Ingebrigtsen made that offer because they felt left out, that they didn't have a chance to get caught up in some of the rest of this stuff. But, Madam Chair, I don't have an amendment, but I just want to make a comment if I could, because I think we're probably winding this down, I would guess. Senator Ingebrigtsen, I think you've got basically a good bill. I mean, I have some differences with it, but I know you've worked very hard on this thing. But Madam Chair, if you'll allow me just one last comment about this, and I do want to ask about a particular appropriation. There was a reference earlier to the veterans' camps, and listen to your explanation. So my question is, why wouldn't that fit into the park section of the bill as opposed to the cultural section?
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Cohen. And I know Senator Pappas made that issue as well, Senator Vandeveer's bill. And at that point, it was determined, well, it is a fact that it is a privately owned 501(c) park. It is not a public park, or it is not a state park. And I think we got into the discussion, and I talked about it a little bit earlier, about heritage, whether it qualified under the dollars. And here you've got a group of veterans that have put together a park over the years that are struggling and working very hard to get together and to be able to come together and speak about their experiences. And I think the testimony, you hate the old cliche, you should have been here to see the testimony, but you should have really been here to understand what the park is about. And those folks are working very hard to be able to convey back and forth amongst themselves and anybody else that wishes to visit the park about what they have went through serving their country and making it a wonderful place for you and I to live. But that was really the big difference was they were not a public park, and that's why they didn't qualify in the public section. The park section, I'm sorry.
Senator Cohen.
Hey, Madam Chair, just relative, maybe yes. I could ask either Mr. Knopf or Mr. Mueller, is there a prohibition in the amendment that would disallow a private entity from participating in Article 2 of the amendment?
Mr. Knopf.
Madam Chair, Senator Cohen, not specifically. It does say it's to assist basically with parks and trails of regional and statewide significance. The key there is it has to be of regional or statewide significance. But it doesn't openly say it has to be publicly owned in the Constitution.
Madam Chair, let me just make the comment, because I don't have an amendment relative to this. But I think it makes the point that we should be a little bit careful as to how we just kind of toss money around with this entire amendment. I think one of the things that we lost sight of 4 years ago is we didn't anticipate the credit collapse of 2008, when this would be some of the only free money in town. And as a consequence, everybody looks to try to figure out how to get into particularly the arts culture section, which is less pinned down as opposed to the other articles. I mean, we've all agreed that we would, at least in the Senate, we agreed over these last couple of go-arounds that we would maintain the integrity of the Lessard-Sams recommendations. The clean water section obviously has certain areas where that money can be utilized. And I certainly have no objection at all. I mean, I've been a huge supporter of trying to provide some limited state support to private entities. But I think this becomes a little bit of a stretch. And Senator Ingebrigtsen, I'm not disagreeing with what you've said. I obviously don't serve in your committee, didn't hear the testimony as to what this camp does and what it means to the vets. Now, if it was being done through the Historical Society, where there was the opportunity for the public to listen to these folks, I happen to do some of this on my own, and I'm not going to get into what I'm going to do when we finish the session, but I'm going to talk to somebody who lives in my district about his experience, which was highly unusual during World War II. And I like that opportunity, but maybe then it should be done through the Historical Society. And then Mr. Kelleher is not – I don't have an amendment, Mr. Kelleher. I don't know how that would work, so don't look too worried. School kids could listen to these folks. But I'm not sure that's what it does. So that's why I think, Madam Chair, we have to be a little bit careful. And like I said, I think by and large this bill – is a good bill. I know Senator Ingebrigtsen has worked extremely hard on the bill, but I just suggest that we should be a little bit careful as to how we just kind of toss around the appropriations with it.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Madam Chair and Senator, I really appreciate those comments, and I think you know me well enough that I've made that comment several times that I, along with everybody else, I think really genuinely feels that they want to be guardians of these dollars and make sure they go in the right direction. And that's kind of the dilemma that we ran into when hearing all these bills in committee. But we thought it was fair. We thought it was fair if we were going to, shift dollars over to one area to take care of something that should have been done before, and that's the one we originally talked about today, the well that had to be cleaned up. But we thought We thought it's certainly appropriate to be able to shift the dollars over to the Vets Administration, and that's what this bill does. They have to apply and get the money through the Vets Administration. And we just felt it was fair, but I certainly appreciate your concerns
Senator Cohen.
Madam Chair, if you'll allow me one last comment, I want to go back to some of the history of the promulgation of this amendment. And there's a little bit of this bill, not a lot, and I want to tell you, Senator Ingebrigtsen, given bills that were introduced, there could have been a lot more. I think the discussion and promulgation of this amendment, again, several years ago, was that this would not be a substitute for a bonding bill and that there would not be capital appropriations in the bill. That's very limited in this bill. It could have been much, much more. So I'm not making a big deal of it. But again, the assumption was we had a bonding bill for such purposes and that this would be for operational support, new kinds of programs, and not things we had been doing historically through a bonding bill.
Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Thank you. Just one more. Just to that point, and again, I appreciate that. Just so you understand and get a flavor of where the committee was, we did actually do a recorded vote on that, and there was only one that voted against that appropriation, just so you know that. So, and thank you again for those comments.
Is there further discussion on Senate File 1363? Is there anyone else in the audience who wanted to testify? If not, Senator Ingebrigtsen moves that Senate File 1363 as amended be recommended to pass and would be sent to the floor. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The Senate File 1363 will be on general orders.
Chair and members, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Senator Ingebrigtsen. We do have two more bills, and there is even hope that we might get done before 4:30 now. So we have Senator Gerlach here.
Senator Hayne.
Thanks, Bill.
We're looking for Senator Gerlach.
Suburban parks.
We have the omnibus liquor bill, and here they come.
So you're a state legislator. You're not just
I said, no, he's a buddy.
Metro
legislator. That's what he said, and I go, no, he's a buddy. That's right.
Just a metro legislator.
Yeah, you're going to do an amendment. Something here for one.
You got one for me. This morning. That's what I helped Minneapolis about.
B12 and 18.
Well, that's important.
Whoops. You got the knobs of the issue when you're talking about it.
Okay.
I can talk about the two.
Well, they didn't reduce the request.
They did initially, but withdrawn.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to sign the papers.
Okay, that's great.
I was just dumb because I called for division when I didn't even.
Welcome, Senator Gerlach. The room will come to order, please. Senator Gerlach is going to be presenting Senate File 918.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. This is the omnibus liquor bill, and it's unusual that it's before the Finance Committee. Actually, it never really has in the past, and it's not in the other body, but we seem to have a fiscal note, so we had to do some discussing of the matter with the Department of Public Safety about this, and they have some updates, and I believe that it's going to greatly improve. So the question came down to really, is it when there's a no effect on the general fund because of a revolving or a special revenue fund, then do you need to see it? And Madam Chair, your staff has said that you would like to take a look at that anyway. So, but that's where we're at. I'm sure the department can speak to some of those details. So, members, this is the omnibus liquor bill, and this has been heard in. Obviously, in commerce, all these bills here or these pieces of it. And I don't know. I do know, Madam Chair, there are two amendments out there. as well that we could discuss. I don't know what you want to do for time frame. I mean, for order of events, if we want to do those amendments. I don't know if you require me to go through the policy of any of these particular provisions in this bill, or if we want to just hear testimony from the Department of, you know, the Department of Public Safety, maybe on the fiscal note and how that's going to change, or what would you like to do first, Madam Chair?
Well, Senator Gerlach, we do have to pass the entire bill out. We're mainly concerned with the fiscal implications, but we would like a brief summary of the entire bill.
Okay. Well, then I can certainly do that. Madam Chair and members, Section 1 is a bill that was brought forth by Senator Magnus, and the issue he's trying to solve is that the threshold for fees to launch a business enterprise such as a distillery was so high at $30,000 that it was prohibitive. And we only have two distilleries in the state of Minnesota. And so he had put together a bill that allowed for an additional license class for micro distilleries. And the department would be able to charge a fee for that licensing commensurate with their regulatory costs. So that's it in a nutshell on Section 1. Section 2 and 3 are also part of that same micro-distillery portion. Section 4 is the brewer taproom license section, and that is known as the Surly Bill. That is Senator Shides, and that was a compromise reached between many parties, and so we put that together, and that would be Section 4. Section 5 is simply, I talked to you previously about the micro-distillery, that's the fee section there. Then on page 3, Section 6, that would be a Senator Roebling provision and dealing with auto racing facilities. And she actually brought forth looking for a liquor license for the Shakopee racing facility. And we decided that rather than granting a singular exception to one facility, that it made sense that if it makes sense in one, that it makes sense in all. So we did a broader brushstroke on that and are just allowing municipalities, again, all these are up to the municipality to issue the license, but we are authorizing the municipalities, if they have a racing facility, that they could offer or they could authorize a liquor license. Section 7 is the wine festival. This would be a Senator Howe provision. And it has to do with the grape growers industry had asked for the ability for them to get together and provide a way to showcase Minnesota products in farm wineries and for wine. And they wanted the ability to get a license through the state to do a one annual wine festival. There were a couple of problems with the initial proposal, and it had been narrowed considerably, and that is it's not limited just to Minnesota because that would be a constitutional problem on the Interstate Commerce Clause, and so that was fixed. And also it was the question about who actually can band together to apply for a license was defined. And then lastly, the question about the off-sale portion, which was the most controversial piece, and what we had decided to do was to limit that to no more than 2 bottles per customer at this wine festival, that would accomplish the goals of promoting the products without becoming a liquor store at a festival. Then also, as we switch to page 4, we have the temporary on-sale license farm winery. That was a Senator Benson provision, and pretty straightforward there. Then the Section 9, private college. This was a provision of mine that was brought to me by the private colleges, allowing them to have a license authorization for some of their events, primarily alumni events. This does not include, the question comes up, does this include Minsky? At this time, it does not. There was some discussion about whether Minsky should be included in this, and they have not brought forth any sort of an amendment to that effect. So currently, this is just the private colleges, but who knows what could happen by the time it gets to the floor. Then Section 10 is the, Section 10 is here on behalf of the city of Moorhead. It was not an actual bill, but Senator Langseth did talk to me about this, and the problem is that we have current law is that if you have a
College that you cannot have a liquor establishment within 1,500 feet of the college facilities. Well, the problem was is that we have Morehead State bought a building off Normal campus, which would have altered the boundary for this, and it became rather silly as we looked at how we would modify that with the various streets and such. And then we also found out that I think 6 out of 7 colleges this applies to already have exemptions on the books, and it just seemed silly to keep carving these out. And the comment I made was, I don't know why we have in law a distance requirement anyway. It must be a state policy that we'd rather have these college students drive than walk. And it made no sense. And so what we decided to do in our wisdom is to just simply repeal that 1,500-foot provision, thereby clearing up the statutes. And it just doesn't seem to make sense. So we that's what we did in this Section 10 of the bill. Section 11, White Bear Township is a Roger Chamberlain provision for White Bear Township. And members, that is all of the sections that are contained in this bill.
All right, then.
Senator Bonoff.